been described as the best job description for shepherds. Mm. And it summarizes it. It's, you know, the strengthening the weak, praying over the sick, binding up the injured, searching for the lost, and bringing back strays. In verses 4 through 6, I'll read that for you. It says, you've not strengthened the weak, and this is the negative part, talking about those shepherds of Israel, and God was really frustrated with them. You've not strengthened the weak, or healed the sick, or bound up the injured. You've not brought back the strays, or searched for the lost. You've ruled them harshly and brutally, so they were scattered because there was no shepherd. And when they were scattered, they became food for all the wild animals. My sheep wandered over all the mountains and on every high hill. They were scattered over the whole earth, and no one searched or looked after them, looked for them. So that's kind of just the results of being a bad shepherd. And then verse 11, and you could read the whole chapter. It's pretty good, but some of it gets a little negative, but it's very good to read sometime. But verses 11 through 16 talks about the work of a good shepherd. For this is what the sovereign Lord says, I myself will search for my sheep and look after them, as a shepherd looks after his scattered flock when he is with them. So will I look after my own sheep. I will rescue them from all the places where they were scattered on a day of clouds and darkness. I will bring them out from the nations and gather them from the countries, and I will bring them into their own land. I will pasture them on the mountains of Israel, in the ravines and in all the settlements in the land. I will tend them in a good pasture, and the mountain heights of Israel will be their grazing land. There they will lie down in good grazing land, and there they will feed in a rich pasture on the mountains of Israel. I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord. I will search for the lost and bring back the strays. I will bind up the injured and strengthen the weak, but the sleek and the strong I will destroy. I will shepherd the flock with justice. So just kind of talking about shepherding and pretty much soul care and transitioning into us, what we're doing here. And spiritual formation is a crucial organizing principle for elders. And just a good reminder for us that our main job as shepherds is soul care and spiritual, you know, formation. And it's very, very easy to get distracted with just some of the simpler stuff, the stuff that we can touch, the building, you know, and things like that, when a priority should be on the strengthening the weak, praying over the sick, binding up the injured, searching for the lost, and bringing back the strays. And just a reminder for us in Ezekiel 34 about doing that. Yeah. Lead a prayer. God, we come to you now, and we are reminded constantly about the work of being a shepherd, being caring for people's souls. And Father, I pray that you will give us wisdom in doing that. It's hard and kind of undaunting with a congregation the size of ours and how to know how to shepherd each one. I pray that you will show us. I pray for small groups that we'll be able to use them as a vehicle for shepherding well. And I pray that our sheep here are cared for.
Yes.
And I pray that they are just with them when they get out into the world, and the wolves, there's so many out there that want to devour them. Our teenagers, our children, so much in this world that can devour them. And I just pray that you will be with parents and be with the rest of us, other members, and us as shepherds, that we will shepherd each other.
Mm-hmm.
And spiritually be concerned for each of us, and show us and direct us and how we can do a better job of that. It's your son, Jesus' name, I pray. Amen.
Amen.
Larry Frank, you dropped these off if anybody wanted your cookies.
All right, Larry.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Anybody have any ideas, or before we go to the people update from Ezekiel 34?
Steve, I was not aware of that particular verse in terms of looking at it from perspective of the sheep being the shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
It's very challenging and thoughtful stuff to think about.
Mm-hmm. I got that out of this book here, which I found in my library when I was looking for another book by Lynn Anderson, which we'll talk about when we get into mentoring other potential elders. Okay, well, people updates, and Jeff, could you lead the prayer for the, when we talk about the people?
Mike Wotek wanted me to keep prayers in front of the elders for his upcoming bar exam on the 29th and the 30th of July.
Is Tom Fitz coming? Or
no, he is not. He's in the practice.
Oh, I didn't see
He's leaving tomorrow morning for London.
Oh, okay.
And he also said that Denise McCoy is having surgery.
Yeah.
Next Monday.
Next Monday. Breast.
For her breast cancer.
Yeah.
I haven't heard that. Who shared that with us?
Don.
Okay.
He texted to us before the meeting that he wasn't coming.
So is that guarded information again, like we learned before, just so that we're as careful as we need to be? Do we know? Or
he did not say that.
If they've been public about it.
Kaylin didn't send out her note today, so I would assume it's probably private.
Okay.
Until maybe if Kaylin has it on, depending on where she has it on her list, if it's less confidential or not.
Thank you.
And back to Mike Wotek, he's grown tremendously in the last 6 months, and I'm really proud of him. And I think he realizes he needed community, and the church is the best community for him. You know, he's meeting with a discipleship group that Kreider's leading, with Gregory and Mark Minton.
And Mark's part of that, huh?
Yeah.
Group
one. Yeah. So, and I think there's one more.
Charles.
Chris Fuller.
Oh, Chris Sporth?
Fuller.
Fuller. Oh, yeah, that's right, Chris Fuller.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And who did you say?
Charles Ackley.
Oh, is he? Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure Charles is in the other one.
Yeah, he's in the Thursday one.
Night.
Okay.
He's in our
and
Thursday.
I don't know if he's in the other one with the younger guys.
Yeah, okay. I don't think.
I think he's in Elk. Yeah. Okay.
Well, Carly and Devin Daniels have moved in. They're down at Neata's.
Oh.
And she's starting prep for the upcoming school year. Has some training this week. So I mentioned them because as new, you know, they were really happy to come to church on Sunday. But I know he applied for an opening at Rooftop.
Yeah.
And that's an ongoing interview process. I guess he's at the early stage of that. But he was enthusiastic. And so I don't know where they're going to land.
Yeah.
But, you know, whenever we see him here, notice him, encourage him. And you know, that'll probably be natural with Chris and Steve, but you just, you know, just know that they're, look, you know, he's got that development, so I'm sure that with you
I
guys.
Gave his name to the Hillsborough Christian Church. They're looking for somebody now, and I gave his name and John Blackmore.
Okay.
It's like I gave one more.
So. The opening, Devin's talking to Rooftop about is a small group minister.
Yeah.
And so I guess they have a full-time position for that.
Yeah, yeah.
And so very interesting structure they've got. And so we'll see.
And financially, I think they're doing pretty well there. I get to this point, I don't remember people that I've thought about during the week.
I really appreciated seeing Katie Benwell in the worship team. Mm-hmm. Was glad she was here, and I was thinking about her and that same thought you had, Brett. So thank you for reaching out to her, putting that into action, and communicating with her. I think was really good. And I didn't talk to her on Sunday, but I was glad to see her up there. And it struck me, you see everybody up there and feeling like we know them and what's going on with a lot of them. Yeah, some good, some bad. But that's like, wow, that's up there praising. And I just thought it was...
I was planning on giving her an email after our meeting just to let her know that we prayed for her and just that we're praying for her and getting a new job.
I'm going to keep Nathan. That's him playing basketball, by the way. Yeah.
That's his rest?
He said he's testing himself. He said he's playing.
Ready to go to camp.
Yeah, he says seeing if he's ready to go to camp.
95 degrees, okay.
Yeah, I talked to him yesterday, and he's hoping to get to go.
Okay.
So what's the decision?
Pardon me?
What is the decision about whether he goes or not?
If he's feeling better and strong enough to be able to make it down to camp.
He was ill on Sunday and had to be nudged to go home and not, you know, keep pushing himself and take a day of rest. And so it's a big week down there, so.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, because he has two roles down there, and so then they're having a supplement for that while he's not there, so.
Yeah. And he and I, we talked the week before just about the whole thing of, you know, in any career, you have the season of imbalance. And just, you know, we've talked about it several times, and just that the summer is the season of imbalance, and you got to really work hard at having balance and getting some rest when you can. So, and his problem is, I think, his first graduate class he's taken this summer, which I'm surprised if there's a lot of youth ministers that they, I think he felt like he had to take it this summer. Mm-hmm. I was going to talk to Carson and say, don't get youth ministers to take a graduate class in the summer. That's just not.
Especially the first one.
Yeah, right. So. And I told him, I said, well, don't take one next summer. Period.
Yeah, it's interesting, the master's classes, they've switched around so much that they become 24/7 almost all year round, trying to get you in and out, I guess, as fast as you can.
Yeah.
So they'll start in the summer. But I know Sophie was telling us that once she finishes, her program will start and she won't be able to do really anything except for be at school for the next 2 years after that.
Yeah. When I did my master's in counseling, I was in no hurry because I wasn't going to change after that. And so one summer I had to take a class, and they didn't have online then, but other than that, I spread it out in 6 years. I had to get it done in 6 years, and I had to go weekdays. And in fact, one class I took, I had to take it on a Wednesday night in our small group on Wednesday nights, and I had to get this guy who had never taught before, and I had to really talk him into it. I've been trying before, but I finally said, you're the only one we've got. So that's when Rusty Andrews had his first time to have to teach a Bible class. Yeah.
So we have a church, there's been a family, the Horns. I don't know how many of you guys have met them, but they've been back the last 3 weeks. So that's pretty positive. So I think they've sort of felt, the kids especially have felt being back in, that they like being here. So I think that's pretty positive. So I wasn't necessarily expecting them necessarily week after week, but now it's been 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Back to back. Just the other family, the...
Joe Nally, and...
Yes, and Stuart.
Stuart, yes.
Jump, yeah.
Yes.
And their daughter, Rosie. Yeah. So they've been in and out. So they were here before, the first time they came was the last week I was here before leaving to Hungary. Then they came back one time in between times, or the Stewart and Rosie, and then John Lee came back, came with them last week. They've been going to, I think, Lafayette originally is where they've been at. And then, I don't know why they're looking for something different, maybe because of location.
Yeah, they moved down Dogtown, maybe?
Where are they
at? Afton.
Afton. Yeah, so closer to here.
They said they moved to Florida during COVID, and they came back to Lafayette, and, you know, things had changed, like a lot of churches, and they didn't feel as connected there. And then they said the second piece is, like you said, they're closer to us. Now, Kate Schneider and Hannah Grimshaw reached out to John Lee, and they had a play date on Saturday, so they're making that connection.
Wow. That's great. Did any of y'all meet Jeff? He's a single guy. Two Sundays ago, he was sitting on the back right side, pretty much by himself, and didn't talk to many people. And Steve Schock and I caught him on his way out, and I've talked to him a little bit. He came from the International Churches of Christ, which is great because Steve Schock came from there. So he first asked, what is y'all's belief on baptism? And then Steve just kind of went on to talk to him about it. And we mentioned to him that, you know, he asked if we have Bible studies going on. I said, well, in the summer, not as much, but usually in fall, we get some small groups started. And so he's come from that structure. And it's hard to fill that structure when that's all they know. And so I'm glad Steve was there. And then he was from originally Iowa. Steve was from Iowa, so that was a good connection. So,
wow, awesome. How old the guy is Jeff?
His name is Jeff. I bet he's 40, something like that.
Middle-aged guy.
Last week I sat by Patrick and
Julia. Yeah, Julia.
And I said, oh, here's a card. Would you fill that out? And he did, I understand.
Yes.
We got some information?
Yeah, so she had sent filled one out the week before online, and then he filled out the one that you gave him, I guess. So I thought it was sort of funny that one filled out one week and didn't include the other, and then the second week, the other one filled it out without including the other. So.
Yeah.
I'd like to get his telephone number.
Yeah, it's on... I don't know if I have it here with me. Yeah. Maybe in the I have it in the office. So
he told me he's got a second job. He's working at Starbucks because he wants...
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Better medical stuff. So he's got two jobs now.
Wow.
But they seem to bug out real quick. I mean, I couldn't catch him from the front last week. But
yeah.
I'd like to... see if we can haul it, man.
Well, we've had a lot of visitors, it seems like, this summer.
I think God just keeps sending people.
He does.
Yeah.
So, Steve, if you talk to Jeff again on Wednesday nights, we're always up here at the building.
Yeah, I did mention that to him. Yeah.
So that's the one that sort of is consistent.
Yeah.
They're looking for consistency.
Okay. He lives in South County. So...
And we do have two Jeffs that go there, so it sort of makes it feel at home.
Yeah, yeah. Anybody else? I guess pray for the Owens family with a transition.
Has your weekly contact with him been occurring, you guys?
No, I haven't. Reached out to him once last week. We exchanged a couple of emails, but nothing in person.
I hate for there to be too big a gap before the 10th, where all of a sudden.
Well, we got on here for him and I to get with him, so probably next week we can set up something to get with him.
Wonderful.
And I've been planning on calling him for the past, all last week, and forgot to. And today I thought about it and forgot to, just to let him know about the NCYM. Decision we made.
Yeah, touch base for some just logistical stuff, nothing like, hey, how to get connected, which I have some thoughts on that too, but
I reached out last week. I sent him an email setting up his computer and stuff and just, hey, love to get coffee sometime, so I just left that open and so I haven't met with him at all, but at least he knows people are thinking about
him. In 14 years, he's got a lot of loose ends to tie up, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Do we know his last day at Fawn Hill?
Let's see. I think he's got a week in between there of nothing. Oh, maybe two. No, maybe just 1 week. Good question. I'll have to ask him again. They were hoping to take a couple weeks, but they couldn't afford it because I don't think they were going to give him his vacation. Mm-hmm. So I encouraged him to ask him, and he said, "Well, he'd been negotiating with him to get it, hit the computer, and not sure if he could do that also." Mm. So okay, Jeff, can you lead us?
God, we come to you as we start, and we're thinking about lots of people, lots of things going on around us. We lift up to you the Owens family as we await their arrival. We ask you to be with all that's going on with them, and Steve meet with them this week. Let that be a blessing to them as they see our interest and our continued excitement toward them being here. We ask you to be with all our new people that have been coming in and around us, whether it be Carly and Devin, or the Horns, or the Jumps, or Jeff, or Patrick, or Julia. We just ask you to bless them, bless their time with us, and help us to be an open door to them. Mm-hmm. God, we ask you for Mike Lotek and his test that he's getting ready for, and the bar exam. We just ask you to bless him and to be with his renewed faith. We ask you just to help him to come closer to you, whether through this or through whatever is helping to move his spirit, God. For Denise, and we ask you to just bless her and her surgery this coming week. We ask you to bless her through that and be with the doctors that are helping her. For Nathan as well, we ask you for his health and the basketball to give him a little renewed energy and to be prepared to go down to camp. We ask your blessings on the rest of this meeting, and it's in Jesus' name we pray.
Amen. Amen. Let me go and see if they're in the halls.
Okay. Something I meant to get with you about was the installation service. We'll talk about it here in a little bit, but the affirmation service.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The last one, where it was going to be you and then me, and I thought it'd be a smoother transition if just we made it one. So I just gave that to you,
okay.
And then I'll just I'll do the working with maybe emceeing with Andrew as he introduces his family and show that. So look at it, see if that works for you.
Hey.
The truck. Oh, I park in the big lot.
Okay.
Old habit.
That's what we were looking for, was your truck. Yeah. And Steve, I didn't see you at church Sunday. I thought maybe you were visiting.
Yep.
The grandchild.
We were. You want to see pictures?
How's everybody doing?
Everybody's doing great.
Quick on the draw.
Yeah.
I can do that faster.
Here's a picture of her
being
soon you'll be
trained correctly. Yeah. Her with Fred Bird and a baseball I got at the ballpark a month before she was born. So
yeah.
And the Fred Bird's almost the same size as she is. So great. Well, thanks for coming.
Yeah.
And I'll turn it over to Steve.
Okay. Hey, well, I'll just remind us. While we're here, there's a couple of documents that was created. You guys have seen these already.
Okay.
So I'm going to put them in front of you so that you have them just in case you want to reference something. But, all right. First document is one that was created from our conversation.
Uh-huh.
And then.
Thought you did a great job.
I'm glad you felt we captured your thoughts.
Yeah.
And then the attached document is the one that we started off as a draft, kind of set the stage for our conversation. So I'm glad you guys came because unity and diversity is a challenging ministry. you know. And so I think it's important that we have a conversation about the ministry and making sure it's a good fit for you guys and your vision, and then you can hear where we're coming from. And my hope is that you leave here, if you're committed to doing this, fully supported, right? And that, or if you feel like what you want to do can't be supported, then you're clear on that as well. So that's kind of what we want to spend some time just kind of working through a little bit of that. And I want to just kind of maybe lay out some things here that I was thinking about this. I was thinking about things that may be influencing our thoughts on unity and diversity, both negatively and positively. Unless we probably have some, a little bit of both.
Unity in general or the ministry?
Well, let me read and we can figure that out, all right?
Okay.
All right. So the Mayberry's approach to the ministry, like, you know, when we think about the ministry, we think about how they, you know, approach the ministry. That's part of how we think about unity and diversity in some ways. And those who know the Mayberries know that they are just a God-fearing, wonderful couple mm-hmm. that have sacrificed plenty for the kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have nothing but good things when I think about the Mayberries. But everybody know the Mayberries in that way. So however they see the Mayberry, sometimes they may even think about unity and diversity the same way. So just want to put that out there as well. One of the things, too, in our class yesterday, we talked about the current polarization and the increased diversity in American society. And so that makes unity and diversity somewhat challenging because, you know, there's a lot of polarization going on right now. And some of that is driven by things that are related to how diverse we're becoming as a society. So that's another piece. Then the other thing, the documents, these two documents, it also shapes some of the thought process of what we're thinking about. Obviously, your vision, you guys' vision for the ministry, and the perception of how members may respond to reviving the ministry. All of that is out there, right? So I wanted to just kind of lay it out that way and then just maybe give you guys a chance to talk about your vision for the ministry, how you see it, and then just let's have some dialogue and see where it takes us.
So do you feel like when the Mittens, is it? When they took over the food pantry, was it clear cut, or did you? I just wonder if there's something different about unity and diversity that, like your little comment that you put at the end there, how members would feel at reviving it.
Well, those are my thoughts because I'm just trying to be open and honest and have a conversation here because I want you guys to be aware of what you might be getting into. So. And I think I alluded to the polarization in my second comment, and that
which we don't have.
Yeah. No, it's just so. And I think those, unfortunately, people have a perception of what diversity should be, right? And how much of it is necessary, and is it really necessary that we have some of these discussions? And so. So I'm just trying to be open and lay things out, and I think you guys are aware of these kind of things that are going on around us, and I want you to be aware of what you are maybe saying yes to.
Mm-hmm. And I guess Suzanne, for me, you know, it's pretty open ended description of a group diversity, and so, you know, some of the things that I don't know is so like it's Pride Month, you know. What if we came into church and there was a pride flag up? You know, it's like, well, you know, are we ready for that? So there's just a lot of things that can be, and you can also do the right thing in the wrong way too, right? And so there's things that you have to be sensitive to, I would think. And so, you know, when we're talking about topics of diversity and unity, there's just a lot of things. And you know, how do we rein that in or make sure that we manage it? And, you know, just that, Certain people have certain hot button items, right? Hot button issues. And you know, you just don't know where everybody stands on those. And so hopefully not all those items are up for discussion and debate, those kinds of things.
So it seems to me like when you mentioned when the Mayberries did it, and I actually went back and reread a Bible plan that Todd had, and there was like 15 or 18 people signed up.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a five-day thing about racial reconciliation.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the focus of all of that was racial,
mm-hmm.
which is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you could work on that issue for decades,
mm-hmm.
not just a week or a month.
Mm-hmm.
But in today's climate, I'm struggling to separate things like racial problems versus political problems. Political differences right now are polarizing my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard for me to sort out racial reconciliation with political. And so then how do I do that at church becomes even more complicated, because mm-hmm. you can't really talk about this and you can't really talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
You can't talk about politics.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you, I'm not even sure what the goal is anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's confusing, because one thing we've really tried to do is be apolitical here with our eldership and even things in worship. And some people dealing with racial things, they thought that was a real political statement. And it really surprised me. And so those are the things that just, I scratch my head at what, and it, well, just the confusing parts of all the polarization that goes on.
Suzanne and I have been involved in helping people in need pretty much ever since we got married.
Mm-hmm.
And it really started in earnest probably with CFS when we finally moved back to St. Louis, and we got involved with foster care. We wanted to do it in Decatur, but waited till St. Louis. We've been involved in foster care. We've been involved in food pantry ministries, Room at the Inn. And Suzanne's always had a passion for racial ministries, racial reconciliation, racial understanding, and coming to grips with our past. Over the years, I've fully supported her, but it's not been as personal with me as it has been with her.
Mm-hmm.
But then our life changed completely when Brian was arrested.
Mm-hmm.
And we've taken off in all sorts of different directions that we never would have expected to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I still want everybody here to know that your guys' support for us during all these, especially 5, 8, however many years ago, were just, words can't describe it. That's the only reason why we're still sitting here.
Mm-hmm.
But we've been involved in, through Brian's trials and visiting, we've made friends of his friends. Suzanne writes as pen pals in two different other facilities. We visit them. And they tell us stuff that blows my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ones that I wanted to share with you guys, just because it's related to church, it doesn't necessarily impact here, but our friend Sean, who's now in Michigan.
Wisconsin, sorry.
Same state.
Mm-hmm.
Not really. He's always wanted to go to church. And so he went to this new facility in Wisconsin, and the chapel was beautiful. And he's just like, oh, this is so great. I've got this beautiful chapel that he can go in and sit down. It looks, I've never seen it, but but then the preacher was fire and brimstone, told them they're all going to hell. And he walked out of there thinking, I may come back because I love this building, but I'm not coming back to go to. So anyway, it's that shows just entrenched Christian thinking that doesn't match with inclusion and forgiveness and mercy and the things that have been so important to us for years and still are. And so how do you keep church out of the way and still minister to the people who are wanting to go to church on Sunday, people who are living in South St. Louis, out of prison, trying to get their life together? How does the church reach out to them? That's where my mind's at right now. Okay. So I'm thinking it, I don't know if I really ever thought about it this way until I just expressed it, but maybe my focus is more external from the church than it is internal right now. I don't know. That's
I don't know what that means, honey.
Well, the people who we need to help are the 18 guys that are part of Viewpoints. That's where my passion is, to help those guys in their lives and their struggles and whatever it takes to help them keep going. That's, I mean, Dave, you, Dave and Amy have been part of that ministry for almost 4 or 5 years. They, every other month, we took dinner over to these guys. And Jim and Freddie Griffith were also part of that before they moved. So anyway, that's, I guess what I'm trying to say is, when I think about it, I think about how to reach these guys rather than reach members of our congregation. Now, maybe another way to look at it is how to get members of the congregation involved and help.
Yes. Yes.
I don't know.
Yes, it is another way of looking at it.
Sounds like a calling to me.
Pardon? And I would say that I know how Alan and I feel about the LGBTQ plus population. And we're aware that we may not be on the same page as everybody in this room. And so I personally, the passion is for, to just put it bluntly, the black and white in America. My brain's not big enough to include LGBTQ.
All those letters.
All those letters. And I am not dismissing it or anything, but I just, with what he said about Brian and our involvement in that, kind of by force, is, and the race issue does fall into play, unfortunately, with incarcerated individuals. And so we are, you said it just perfectly, if y'all had a chance to read this. We were approached by Steve as possibly leading this ministry, but we certainly weren't looking to do that. And regardless of what's decided here, we would still just like to learn more about the race riot in East St. Louis and take anyone who wants to do Crown Candy. We don't want to lead a class. We don't want to bring speakers in. We don't want any of that. We just want to learn. St. Louis, I have heard people say, is one of the most segregated cities in the United States. And I don't think that's pleasing to Jesus. And so we want to learn more about that, the history of that, how it got that way. And if there's other people that want to learn more about it, great. But we're not looking to change anyone's mind about anything.
Can I maybe add on to that? And maybe not change people's minds, but we are interested in changing
the fact that it's so segregated.
Changing people's
perceptions,
maybe, or changing parts of society, laws. a lot of what Suzanne's done in the last 3 or 4 years through Prison Fellowship is actually advocating to our senators and congressmen and representatives. So that's been an important part of what you've put a lot of effort into for 3 or 4 years, is trying to actually make changes through Prison Fellowship at the both the state and national level, and had a couple of victories.
So, kind of two-pronged, you know, our involvement with prison ministry, and then just the fact that we live in St. Louis.
So education is very much a part of what you want, and education to help change perception.
Yeah. Right, but what I'm hearing is so you guys have a heart for a lot of things, and it's like CFS, foster care, food pantries, Room at the Inn, racial reconciliation, prison ministry, whatever. It's a lot of things that tugs at your heart, but you're thinking for this primarily it's view it principally as an exploration of the African-American experience, mostly here in St. Louis, is kind of what your view is, is that's kind of the focus of it.
Education, yeah. I think Steve said.
Right, but again, it's not just education, because there's a lot of things, but primarily education over the African-American experience, right? So not, again, you guys are involved in a lot of things, but, you know, so you're not going to be going in 4 different directions, prison ministry, CFS, food pantry, and everything.
No,
it's mostly just going to be.
No, because those things he listed, we aren't doing anymore.
Right, okay.
Well, yeah, some of them are in the past, like food pantry.
And CFS, whatever else.
Right.
It's pretty much prison ministry.
Although I did have lunch with Eric last week to talk about his fatherhood initiative. And
in the prison.
He's making a lot of pretty cool connections and meetings that he's having with facilities in the St. Louis area.
Mm-hmm. There's some interesting synergy with that, because there's racial elements of that initiative and prison elements, you know, fairness and and that kind of thing. So that's kind of an interesting avenue, you know, that dovetails with this. So a lot of things could fit under this umbrella, and we just didn't want to hand it off and without helping, you know, clarify and you know, it's not a reflection of you guys, it's just a reflection of this topic. I was like, wow, how do we really do this well? You know, Mayberry's had their vision, and we appreciated it. And then we're missing that and don't want to let it go. And so, you know, what do we do with it? So really appreciate. And I think following what's on your heart with those elements makes a lot of sense, you know, and raising awareness of things and shared experiences. The scriptural basis, there's so much in the Word about the way Jesus treated fringe or outcast or rejected folks. And really, that's what we're talking about here is, and there's lots of categories with that. And so how do we not forget that and be about that ourselves? And
I think Churches on the Street is awesome.
Yeah.
You know, the two college and high school at our table yesterday, both are involved in that, and that's just, and I want to do that too.
Yeah.
So that's,
I'm sure Nathan.
Yeah, it's another good example.
Open arms.
Yep. Yeah.
So the other interesting observation, I think, is even though we as a church have this program going right now, if you look around, our racial, diversity. Mm-hmm. Our diversity right now in our congregation, in our meetings, is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And so how could we not have a program and get great results? Are we going to just mess it up if we stick?
Like, I think you and I talked about how, you know, like, if we decide not to do it, we still want to do a field trip to East St. Louis and Crown Candy.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if we had to get your permission to do that, then we would ask you. And so, you know, we have an interest in those things without necessarily a need to be the ministers of or whatever to culture, unity, and diversity.
Yeah. And I like that. And there shouldn't be any pressure to say we need 12 events scheduled, you know, and he let us know what they are and all that. You know, it's, you know, whatever is God puts on your heart. And I do think, you know, guess St. Louis, you know, we've got Pruitt-Igoe and all that. And I don't even know if you guys are aware of that, but there's a lot of history that, you know, you don't even have to take a side, just put it out there. And it just explores a lot of what, why St. Louis is like it is and stuff like that. So,
yeah, like, you know, it's kind of like the sex offender registry. Of course, we know what that is, but a lot of people don't. And, you know, just letting people know what that is, people are oftentimes surprised to find out what's involved with that. And so in the same way, I think that there's a lot of history in St. Louis that there might be people that they don't know about it. And like, I don't know all of it. Nobody here knows all of it. But as we strive to be more like Jesus, I mean, the sermon pretty much yesterday spelled it out. Yeah. I just, you know, that Jesus reached out to a woman, a Samaritan. I mean, you just, you can't deny Jesus's love of the people, for the people that the society in general would like to ignore or not face up to it or something. So, you know, while we don't want to, let's just, the elephant in the room, we don't want to ruffle any feathers. We also, I think, I wanted Steve to include the word activist and advocate. I think it's funny, he wore his prison fellowship and I wore my Unlock Second Chances. Because we do believe that for ourselves, that there are, whether it's society or the church or culture, there are some things that, like whenever we've done anything, I hope that if there's someone that needs to hear this, that they hear it. And so, you know, we're certainly not going to fix the ills of society on our own or in any way, but there's just more, there's always more that can be done in Jesus' kingdom.
I've seen a lot of growth with the ministry. I remember being on some of those Zoom calls and people have an opportunity to express how they arrived to where they are. And when we were engaging in conversation, they also were able to see they had a lot of disinformation that they had processed as factual information. And so as we began to talk through some of that, they began to recognize some of the things that had processed as disinformation, how they had shaped their thought process, and they were able to work through some of that, those things, and saw the growth in people. And so that's why I'm an advocate of just having conversations, giving people opportunity to learn if they are interested. This is, in my mind, this is very much a grassroots effort. Those who want to be a part of it will be a part of it, you know, and if they see them, if they see this as an opportunity for them to grow in areas where they see that they need to grow and they feel like this is a way they can do it, well, then we won't provide this opportunity for them to do those things. And so that's my thought. You know, this is very much grassroots. This is very much volunteer. If you want to be a part of it, it's just making it available. And those who want to be a part will be a part. And those who choose not to, choose not to. So.
One of the, I've read many books on racism, written by white authors, written by black authors, and one of the common things that you hear from black authors is that it's been said that, like, just, let me just say very simply, like if I were to go up to you and say, well, what's it like being black?
Mm-hmm.
And right. So that it can be what I read is that it can be tiring for mm-hmm. black individuals mm-hmm. to just constantly be repeating the ills of our society.
Yeah.
And so I think partly what I see is that we are, us white folk are educating ourselves
mm-hmm.
on it. And mm-hmm. just if other people want to learn more, then... Yes.
Well, I think in the kingdom, we just have, you know, brothers and sisters. We don't have folk in terms of color skin. And it's funny, I'm in a law firm with two Jewish partners, and one of them today handed me a document that I brought in here just to share with the guys. And I just thought, wow, this was in the New York Times. Why American Jews no longer understand one another.
Mm.
Sound familiar?
Mm.
I see the kingdom being much larger than just racial things.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I want to know what you think about this. And I thought, okay, that's something I'd be happy to, you know, sit down and talk with him about. I think you say, you know, what do people need to know? They need to know this book right here, you know. Everything that we need for the kingdom is right here. And when people say, well, you don't have some learning that, you know, it kind of reminds me of, you know, right after first century, there was a group of people that, you know, came around and said, well, we have some learning that you other people don't have. And that was the start of, you know, churches dividing and so on. It's real simple, I think. Just like you were talking about, you know, the woman at the well. That's what, you know, the Lord, that is the plan.
Mm-hmm.
But the plan is not based on a book. It's based on the cross. And, you know, Marshall Keeble was the one who said that, you know, interracial marriage is when a Christian marries a non-Christian. You know, that's, I think, dead on. And that's a black preacher that, you know, used to go around and tell the world that.
Mm-hmm.
So I see it being
right.
Much
I see what
larger.
You're saying. But we have an opportunity in St. Louis to see with our own eyes what happens when people have well, let me just say that Alan and I did this thing. One of the libraries put on a thing about racism, and it was
which one?
The one, the library one, where every week or every day we read something for 21 days.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I was just thrilled that in 2022, the real estate agency in St. Louis issued an apology.
Hmm.
To black homeowners and those who don't have homes for the redlining of the 50s. And that was just, for me, wonderful to hear. And they, you know, the organization is wanting to put more money into developing black realtors and just getting the word out. And so... you've got, I think Steve talked with us a lot about social, Jesus's social ministry versus, so I don't see it as any different than what you're saying. It's all under the umbrella of Jesus and Micah 6:8. Act justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God. And whether or not that verse is quoted or not, you know, we are, so we are truly wanting, again, while it is the whole kingdom, St. Louis is a unique place. and there are things that we can learn. I'm going to use the word learn. Sounded like you were kind of not liking that word.
But I think the woman at the well is a great case study, because you start thinking about the woman at the well. She was ostracized. She was excluded from her community. And she lived her life and practiced her life like she was excluded. She went to the well at a time where it wasn't, community wasn't there. So she did those things because she realized she was ostracized. And so what Jesus did, he told her that she was included in his kingdom. And now what needs to happen also, those people who have been ostracizing her, they need to begin to learn how to love her, you know. And there are steps there's barriers that they need to break down so they can begin to learn how to love her. And Jesus provided those steps and those barriers, right? And I think one of the things that happened, that I saw happen, I saw those barriers came down, where people didn't even realize they had those barriers up. There was a sense of, this is not the best word to use, that it was righteous behavior, right? And then when they put that in context of what Jesus called them to, they had to reevaluate that. And so I think the case study is that, how do we get the woman at the well in the community? How do we get the community to the woman at the well? And what happens there is, how do we bring Jesus to both of those groups, right? And I see unity and diversity can be a part of that, be a part of that, be a part of the healing process, be a part of breaking down those barriers that people have erected in front of them, that keeps one of us apart, because we don't understand, because we have this information that it's okay to treat a person this way, and we don't even realize that we're doing certain things, right? We don't realize that we're causing this pain. And so I think unity and diversity can provide some of that. This is not the full answer, but it can provide some of that, where it allows those bridges to be crossed and where people can meet one another in places where they both can be accepted, they both can feel wanted, they both can feel being a part of the same community. And so that's part of the role, I think, that unity and diversity can play for us as a congregation and for us as a community.
I feel that the, and I will use the word passion, and it is when I, at whatever age, saw the footage of fire hoses being used on the kids in Birmingham, Alabama, that just changed me, and I knew it wasn't right in God's eyes or Jesus' eyes. And so we're just being honest here. That's where the passion is. And
I think the passion is in our beliefs, Suzanne and my shared beliefs, that even though there aren't fire hoses being sprayed on kids anywhere in our country right now, but the problems, the underlying issues, are almost as raw as they were back in the 50s. The level of greed that I see in our political system, the divide of wealth versus
poverty
is not the right word.
Jesus called it manna.
Manna, yeah. And so we believe that those things exist, and I think we both believe that our country's made a lot of headway in them in 20, 30 years. And it's being torn up in front of our face every day, every week. Those protections, the social safety nets. If until we get a perfect society where everyone has a job that can pay all their bills, we live in a country that has a social safety net, and that's disappearing in front of our eyes. And it impacts our black brothers and sisters even more than, well, maybe it doesn't impact me. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I think it impacts people in a certain percentages higher. Anyway, I kind of lost my track.
No, I relate very well to that. But.
Well, I think what I was wanting to say, too, is I am white. I have plenty of money, a roof over my head. And so I don't understand where the desire comes from to learn everything that I can about our black brothers and sisters and their history in the United States and their history in St. Louis. But I do believe it comes from God.
Amen. Mm-hmm.
And so it's just something that has burned inside me brightly, and nothing seems to diminish it. And
I pray the Spirit will continue to lead you in that way.
Yeah. So what are the next steps? We want to make sure that we have a plan when we leave here in terms of next steps. Do you guys see yourself as kind of the...
I think we are...
He's scared of the word minister. Ministry leaders.
We are super hard workers. Mm-hmm. But when you... I don't feel like new ideas come from me. Mm-hmm. I love when new ideas are presented and they help me understand my feelings or whatever, and I love to get involved, but I just am not, I don't believe, at least at this time, I'm the guy that these new ideas come from. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I'm scared of this word, leader.
Well, to guess what you're doing, what you guys are considering doing, they're not like new things. These are things that's been plaguing the world since almost the beginning of the time, right?
I know, which is absolutely true. Then you get frustrated.
So it's not like you got to come up with new ideas. So maybe the next step, you guys continue to pray about this. And
and it doesn't have to all be on your shoulders. You guys just facilitate other people coming in and helping also.
Yeah.
We, in a nutshell, I think we see ourselves as field trip leaders.
Yeah. Okay. And that's great.
It's maybe a little more than that. But
But we like the word facilitator.
Yeah.
Okay. That's great. Okay. Okay.
Facilitate opportunities. I mean, let's face it. If your life is going well, and you have everything you need, the only thing that motivates us to learn about the possibility that other people's lives aren't going as well, or they might not have all they need, is, I think, Jesus. Mm-hmm. 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 If it weren't for Jesus, he and I would just sit in our lovely, ridiculously overpriced Webster Groves home. We drove past a home yesterday, few blocks from our house, that is on the market for $1.5 million. Mm. And that's crazy.
That's the neighborhood you live in, huh?
It's the neighborhood we live in.
Yeah.
And so we, we could just sit back and enjoy our life. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But that isn't what Jesus calls us to do. Mm. And so
do you feel like we support your vision as a group here? Do you feel that we are aligned, or do you feel we are aligned?
I think we're aligned unless you think that we're going to lead this group. I would love it if we had a list of three or four activities to do, and we would get it, line them up, and I don't know.
Yeah. So,
you've got your plans of doing some things.
Yeah.
I'd say you do that and see where the Spirit leads and builds on with that.
We're also people joining you. Newbies at this retirement thing here.
Hey.
Suzanne actually considers today her first day of retirement, because if she wasn't retired, this would be she would have just been getting off of work.
Work started
today.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, congratulations. I would have had my summer off.
Yeah.
But then I would have been back in the office today. So.
Wow, already?
Yeah.
July. Wow.
Crazy.
This is July.
I know. Okay. I know.
So we are still getting our feet wet. And the other, I'm not making excuses or anything, but Sean and Maggie and Parker are living with us. And so when everybody's in the house together, when we get up, our lives are not ours.
And we love it.
Yeah. Well, this is not something you do every day. I mean, this is something that you guys plan out over a period of time, and then you offer it to some others, right? You make an announcement, hey, we're going to do this in a month.
Yeah.
And then you plan it out, and it's not something you need to do every day.
If you guys are okay with, just us picking a date, and because there's 24 sites in East St. Louis that are called sacred sites, and I know this because of going to a bookstore in Bellevue.
Is that Belleville?
Belleville.
Yeah.
I just was driving in East St. Louis, and there it was, a sign giving you some history. And so, we would just put an announcement in saying, we'd like to learn more about what happened in East St. Louis in 1917, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And we're meeting this date here, and whoever wants to join us can join us.
Another interesting thing that I know we just briefly mentioned when we were having lunch together was the idea of throwing it out to anybody who wanted to go, and I would envision maybe 5 to 8 or 10 people take a weekend trip to Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of things there to do, to absorb.
Mm-hmm.
And then also part of the plan is to meet with Ted Kriegler and his church. Because when he was here last, he and I talked, and it sounded like it would be very interesting to see what their church is doing. Mm-hmm. And you talk about that's all networking. That's the word I'm looking for.
It's beautiful. That'd be beautiful.
It's really sometimes encouraging to see what other churches are doing. So a trip down there is something that I'd be interested in putting together.
Okay. You guys both authorized to drive a van too, right?
I filled out the paperwork.
So you sold, okay.
And I filled it out too.
Yeah, I think
you did. You watch the
video?
Did you
do the video? Yeah.
No.
Okay.
I filled out the safety background check for... to do
okay. Yeah. So there's a video that, I don't even know if there's an exam at the end of it, but there's a video to watch that's just, driving 50 passenger van awareness stuff.
Could someone send that link to us?
Yeah, I'll do that.
Okay. And it was $1,000 they have to put down?
Yeah. Each one of the elders. All right, guys. Well, this is wonderful. Can I pray? And then?
Sure.
Yeah.
Heavenly Father, we are so grateful to just have an awareness that you are our God. And Lord, and just how when we met you, you just changed us so much. And, you had us to look at life so differently in ways that we could not see. Now we can see.
And,
Lord, we're thankful for the people at this table and those who have a mind to just want to continue to be obedient to the gospel and the calling that you put in front of us, and most of that is, you talk about family and community, and we want to be a group of people that is inclusive to all. We want to be a group of people that love one another, regardless of what they look like, what their background is, but we just want to love because you first loved us.
And yes,
Lord, we want to be a welcoming place to those who come through the door, and we want those who people to feel like they can see you here because they can see you in us.
Yes.
And Lord, we just ask that as we think about giving opportunities for unity and celebrating diversity, that you guide our steps. We thank you for the Kelpies for considering this, and we just ask that you place on their heart what it is you want them to do. We pray all these things in your name. Amen.
Amen. Amen.
Thank you for your passion.
Thanks.
So if you guys are okay with our first couple things, crown candy.
Yeah.
Are we invited to come too?
The last time I was there, we did a VBS over on the other side of the street in that walking mall.
Awesome.
Yeah, wow.
Awesome. So, yeah. And then, going over to East St. Louis and just learning about that.
Okay. I think Crown Candy is close to where the Cannons live.
It is.
But I don't have my bearings on where it is compared to that. I know where they're
at. I've been to the Cannons once, but I haven't associated it with Crown Candy. So we definitely would make sure they want to go.
Okay. Yeah. So what are the details of the band's ministry to pick them up?
So usually the van's available on Sunday, both vans actually. And so I usually use the newer van and pick it up Sunday morning. But you've got to be authorized to drive the church van. And so that's that background check and the safety thing that the insurance company makes them feel warm and fuzzy. If you watch that video. I usually communicate with them on Saturdays when I'm going to pick them up and how many people, because sometimes you can pick up 10, literally, and sometimes 3. And so maybe I'll just use my own vehicle if there's only 3 coming that day. So I touch base with the Cannons.
So you know that before you leave the parking lot here?
Yeah. Now, it's fluid because, you know, yesterday, for example, I thought I was going to get the whole... everybody, but Whitney ended up staying home with the twins because they were up all night. Well, she didn't know that until.
Yeah.
So I picked up 4 people, you know, instead, which was, you know, okay, but you just never know. And then Amy picks up Jordan and David Upton. Jordan Palmer and David Upton, they're a little more South City instead of North. So we divide and conquer. But there would be a way to do them all in one loop if you wanted to string it together. So I could talk to you about those logistics, but that's kind of the Sunday morning routine.
We do travel a lot, but I want to be part of that ministry.
We don't travel as much since Sean and Maggie live here.
Yeah.
We're going next weekend, and then the weekend after that, and then...
Okay. Yeah. Well, Amy and I are going to be gone August 3rd.
We're gone the same
3rd.
Time.
Are you?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're leaving the 7th.
Okay.
When are you getting back from that?
Actually, we're leaving the 2nd. So August 3rd is a need, and we could drive on the 10th.
You can drive on the 10th. We're in town, I think.
Okay.
So, all right. Well, there's a good starting point.
Need to follow up on that.
Yeah. Nice. Thank you.
Great. Well, thank you very much for your passion.
We appreciate you guys,
Thanks
too.
Thanks for your thoughts, Brad.
You know? Very much.
And congratulations on your first official day of retirement. Yeah. So, what time did you get up?
9:15.
Oh, that's good.
So we do have the family trained in that we don't come out of the bedroom until 9:00.
Okay.
So they don't. They stay quiet, and then we're there with them until he goes to bed. And
one of my things I've thought of over the years, when I'm retired, I'm going to help work on my kids' cars. And so I spent the afternoon working on Sean and Maggie's cars.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So that was a good retirement day for me.
Too. Yeah.
And I just want to say that Brad Stevens, and I'm not going to cry, but he's the one who hooked us up with the lawyer that Brian used at the start of everything. Leaves us speechless.
Yeah.
He was a nice, very nice Christian man from Olathe, Kansas.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Thanks, guys. Okay, documents to finalize here. Well, any response or any comments with the university?
I think.
Whatever the thing is, yeah.
I think this ministry being a series of opportunities to learn is fine.
I think so too.
I think that's a good thing. Yeah. And, you know, not trying to promote certain solutions, but raising awareness, that's absolutely fine. That's what I heard. So
Yeah,
the way it's outlined, I mean, I have reservations about these types of things, but I guess the way they've discussed it, you know, makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I wanted to tell them a story about when I was in Detroit visiting my daughter's church. There was a couple sitting next to us, and the guy who did the Lord's Prayer got up, and it was, you know, kind of the hallelujah, United States of America is, you know, the supreme, you know, thing. And I'm going, you know.
Yeah.
And so the guy sitting next to us when church was over, and he said, well, that was interesting. He says, I'm from Canada. And I said, there is, you know, everybody thinks their area of the world is unique. Yeah. It isn't, you know.
So do they still go to the Rochester Church of Christ, or they go somewhere else?
Oh, Clint's always bouncing around preaching
over
the place, too.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think home is Rochester at the moment. But, you know, it just is funny to think about, you know, you're never going to be able to convince people that, you know, their area is, you know, sacrosanct.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's like, I love just, you know, having Jewish partners and, you know, these things, the same issues that we have right here. Mm-hmm. And just, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I guess one other comment. So, like, the discussion of the term learning, you know, that Suzanne and Brad talked about is... So the way it's used is there's one side of this. You know, there's something you need to learn and something I need to teach you. So it's not a discussion. And that is always an interesting viewpoint, you know. And so I always struggle with that as well. And you know, it's like marriage counseling where only the husband gets to talk. And so when you talk about
points of view.
Yeah, so I want to teach these people, which means there's one viewpoint, and it's mine. And again, I know where they're coming from, but that is one of the concerns on that.
That's why Jesus was silent when Pilate asked the question, what is truth? You know, if you can't see it standing in front of you, how do you convey it any other way?
Okay, next is we went through the minister affirmation service. So with all the changes, put this in here. And so kind of go through that.
You can change this a little bit. So three is Don Fitzgerald, right?
He's doing two and three. Yes.
Right, so that's what I thought.
And I made one change on this, going to number 10, the congregational affirmation, prayer, and laying on of hands. That was two different things, but I thought the flow would be better if we just did one. So that's the one thing I changed after getting home and seeing that. And then what I'll do is I'll probably get up and kind of MC or introduce Andrew to introduce his family, and we'll try to get some slides up there, and then I will then say a prayer before the fellowship meal and dismiss everybody to go to the reception. And we will, after the laying on of hands, we'll let the people that are organizing the reception to leave after that.
Okay.
And then we'll just have the time with Andrew
introducing. Right. So that was my other comments on 11 and 12. Those are both in the auditorium, right?
Yes, right.
Because
usually
we'll pray in the fellowship, in the gym, but we're going to do it all in the auditorium.
Yeah, we decided it'd be best just to do it in there, and then we'll just go in and eat. It's just...
Right, and I agree. I just want to make sure it's clear. And the other comment that I had on here is, right at the top of this, is we discussed that it should be boom, boom, boom. We're all sitting up in the front pew, and when one person steps away from the podium, the next person's stepping to the podium, right? And so that's kind of how it's going to happen. So we're all going to be up front, so there's no lag in the exchange.
We can just put chairs on the stage and just have
it. It'd be like a Baptist church.
Yeah. Baptist church, and have one big throne or something for Andrew or something.
Oh, and the other one I had is for A and B. Jointly, those are no more than 15 minutes, right? I think we talked about maybe 5 and 10, but no, we're saying maybe no more than 15 minutes, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And we can reevaluate that if we want to do the whole thing in 10 minutes.
Because I'm shorter is good. I mean, I know we talked about getting through all this in time, and so we just need to be clear on that with him. And
the time, we don't want to go real long,
right.
But it's not as critical because we're not having class. We're going right from this to the reception, too. So that kind of
gives the criticality isn't about that. It's about having all the kids in the auditorium with us and not having disruptions.
Yeah.
So that's the biggest thing about his time. If it's 10 minutes, we're not going to have any issues. If he starts to get to a 15-minute sermon or a 20-minute sermon, you're going to have lots of antsy kids starting to bug the whole service.
I would say we give 8 A and B, let all that be 10 minutes.
Okay.
10 and 15 at the max or something like that.
Yeah, I would just say had him set him for 10, and he's going to talk probably 12 minutes. But
Okay.
I'll keep the communion
touch
really short.
Yes.
I think the other piece that will be helpful so that we'll know is if Joyce can give us about an approximate time she's going to need to get things set up. Because I think they're going to probably do some things prior, get the tables and things out like that, and then get the food. And that way we have a sense. Because I would love for us to try to just leave from the auditorium and go right to the gym rather than mingle in the foyer floor.
Yeah.
You know, we can figure out how to make that happen. That would be great. Even if we go a little bit longer in our auditorium and they're ready 5 minutes before we're ready, you know, that would be great. So if we have a sense of how, you know, if we need to add one more thing in here just to, you know, make that happen, that would be fine too at the end.
So two more. So, we need to know what that time interval is, but the other is I need to talk to the safety team to say, don't let anybody in that gym. And so I forgot to add that to my list. So that's the other thing is
give a card out to everybody. Yeah. These are the people that can get into the gym ahead of time.
So anyway, I'll have the safety team.
Okay, well, let me ask this. It was more critical with the retirement. What if people just moseyed in there and just waited? Is that a critical thing?
Well, I didn't know if that's going to get in Joyce's way. And plus, we wanted to introduce their family, right?
Well, yeah, we do that, but we'll say that takes 10 minutes and they need 15 minutes. We dismiss them to go on in and is it really critical to block the doors and say you can't go in there yet?
Well, I would say yes, in that people will be leaving the auditorium before all they're going to be leaving at 9. And so 10, 11, 12... Some people are going to stay, but some people are going to be walking around. And some people are always out in the hall anyway. Yeah. And so I would prefer just having somebody just to watch the doors.
Yeah, so the antsy kids, I think, are going to be the ones that are going to be the issues. Mm-hmm. The teenagers, like the young teenagers, so the middle schoolers and the younger kids, or like the fourth or fifth graders, are going to be the ones that are going to jet to the tables to get food and be there waiting, trying to get food while they're trying to prepare.
Yeah, okay.
So really that interval is the key piece. Mm-hmm. If we know that they need 10 minutes, let's say, to set all the food out, because really they should have everything ready to a point where they're just really bringing it out of the warmer, bringing it out of the fridges, put it out there, and get in and having it out for everybody.
Yeah.
So then I think this 10-minute interval should be enough to let people be ready. And then we could probably make an announcement and say, kids, you have to stay with your parents. Mm-hmm. Because the parents could go in there and keep their kids under control.
Yeah.
And the adults won't have a problem waiting.
And from 10 to 11, you know, after you're done and we're laying on hands, we just tell everybody to go back to the pews and we just go on with the next thing and not dismiss anybody.
Correct.
So we can do that.
And being that most people will still be in their same exact spot.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not going to change much for them.
So we just do that, and then do we need a shepherd's prayer at the end?
No. I think that, I mean, we just had the
Dave's prayer.
Dave's prayer is pretty much the shepherd's prayer.
Okay,
yeah. And you're going to pray for the food, so two shepherds praying. There's two shepherd's prayers right at the end.
Gotcha. Okay, that's a good shepherd's prayer. Okay, shepherd's prayer A, shepherd's prayer B. Okay. Okay, anything else?
Sounds good.
Okay. That's
that. I could say that Steve Walker's...
Yeah.
So Steve Walker's prayer, number 5, if there was somebody that we had to need to pray for,
okay.
we could put it at that point in the middle.
That's good.
As opposed to at the very end, because the end has very specific points to those prayers,
okay. yeah.
where this one is it's a little bit more open, I okay. think. And
okay.
So we okay. can arrange everything a little bit differently for that week. That would be sort of the unofficial shepherd's prayer, let's say.
Yeah.
Okay.
And again, with number six, Brett, with yours, you may decide you don't want to do all three of them. You just okay. decide what you want to do on that.
Yeah.
And then communion thoughts. And then you got the children's giving and all that stuff. Do I need to put that communion thoughts and offering? I'll put that in there.
Go ahead. Hopefully I won't forget that.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else with that? Done. Now the onboarding, we've talked about that. I didn't have to make too many changes on that. Number two ended up being the rest of that. There was a three at preaching and worship, but number two, first 90 days, is orientation, relationships, and ministry and tech integration.
Mm-hmm.
That's involving all of that.
So, Steve, can one thing came up yesterday, it's just something for us to think about, is I was talking with Betty Bond at the class yesterday, and in her mind, she realized that, hey, you know, there's going to be, you know, some hand-holding for Andrew. Is going to, you know, he's not going to jump right in and start preaching every Sunday. And there's a process to help him get prepared for the pulpit. And one of the things that we talked about, and it was something I heard doing worship yesterday, made me think that we maybe need to be communicating a little bit of this, is that letting people know that, you know, in some form or fashion, because someone said yesterday during when they were closing, said, "Hey Jeff, this may be the last time we hear you preach."
It was Brian.
And yep, it was. And in my mind, I'm thinking he's thinking that, aren't
right?
Andrew will be preaching every, yeah. you know. Yeah. And so, and then Kaylin said that she had to also work with somebody because they had that same yeah. impression in their head. So I think maybe before he gets here, we can begin to help the congregation understand the process a yep. little bit so that the expectation is already set for them. Mm-hmm. And we're not trying to do that while he's on board.
Yep.
We can begin to communicate that before he gets on board.
Yeah. Who does the Shepherd's Prayer this next Sunday?
Might be me.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
So the interesting thing about it is that we have, because it's been but over a year, or just about a year, since Jeff mm-hmm. retired, people don't remember what was going on when Jeff was here. Jeff wasn't preaching every week, usually three times a month, usually.
Mm-hmm.
If there was a fifth Sunday, he didn't preach that for sure,
mm-hmm.
plus then usually another one. And so we just have to make people aware that this is the methodology, and generally that's what we're going to follow with Andrew too.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that it sort of now slipped the mind that, well, Steve's preaching this week, Dave's mm-hmm. preaching this week, mm-hmm. Steve. And so that's in our minds, that it's like we never hear one person consistently. But
mm-hmm.
but in reality, we were doing that before.
Yeah.
We were.
And, you know, so I've got in here on preaching and worship, getting a sermon calendar plan, September through November sermon plan. And I put in there three sermons a month. We'll need to help him to see who to get to preach in his for the fourth Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You didn't volunteer for all of them.
You know, me organizing yeah. all this prevented me from having to do it.
You've done one, I think, since the. Or yeah.
Well,
the elders did it. You
helped. Yeah, and then a couple of them that we did a praise and worship. But
when you skipped the one you were supposed to actually preach. So.
Yeah, right, yeah. So we'll need to remember that he does it. You know, one of us can kind of say, well, you know, this person may be good with even with this series. He's doing a series, somebody to mm-hmm. continue that series.
Okay.
Yeah, and maybe like come up with, get your list that you've yeah. had and just sort of say, these are people that have preached in the last year.
Mm-hmm.
And then that way he knows that if he gets sick or something, mm-hmm. he knows who he can sort of reach out to a little bit faster,
yeah.
possibly because they've done it before.
Yeah.
If he gets sick or something, I would hope
Brad.
We would be.
Well, Steve's got the back pocket sermon.
Yeah, we do have that back pocket sermon.
So you're on call for that one.
Yeah. And I've already given it all to Kaylin, and she's got it all worked up in case we have to go to that.
Yeah.
Although my intention was having all the elders
reading Matthew 5.
The Matthew 5 and 6 with a Sermon on the Mount. But I think she has some other people, but we can figure that out. So,
one of the welcome materials we've got to deal with before he starts is he needs to be presented his health and dental and vision insurance options.
Okay.
And so that should occur on or around August 1.
And so, okay, let's see now.
And primarily Elizabeth. And so if he's coming in here to meet with you guys, or if you need to take something with you that she puts together, I don't know what that's going to look like. But we can't spring that on him on the 10th.
Yeah.
Okay. Give him time to digest. And
okay.
And we have an end-user computer policy. That's not a rush, but usually we'll want that within the first couple of weeks of when he starts.
Okay. What'd you call it?
Oh, it's a computer fair use, or it just says that he's not going to look at anything untoward, and you know, et cetera, et cetera. And so everybody has to sign that.
Okay.
So if you go to a Coldplay concert.
That's right. Snap.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Boy.
Don't do it.
Yeah.
For a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then we also have a sexual molestation training course that we do once a year, and we're doing it the second week he's in the office, I think. Yeah. Because we're all supposed to do it this year, like around September. And
that's good timing.
And so it just ended up working out that we pushed it 2 weeks.
Is that something we should go through too?
I think you do, elders do go through a different version, not the same one that the staff does.
Yeah.
That would be good to
So Elizabeth did that last year in late July, early August, something like that. And so we're just pushing it off until the first week of September, I think. And then she'll be here too.
Speaking of Elizabeth, can I inject something here?
Yeah.
Because I want to get your opinion. She is overwhelmed right now. And we were talking with her at our last meeting, and I kind of threw your name out there saying, well, there might be some help on the way, but I didn't really, you know, promise anything other than I just mentioned to her that you might have more time after October to, you know, help take some of that stuff on. Is that okay?
Yeah, but it's a bigger discussion, and I need to talk to Steve Walker about some things where, and I said this before, and I don't know how you characterize it. She is an alcoholic. She has a compulsive personality, and there's things she needs to do, and then there's all the other stuff she does, and she can't keep that straight in her head. And so, I just need to talk to you about some of that, because I'm thinking when Andrew comes on, it might be a good time to say, "Hey, Elizabeth, we need to make sure that you're focused on this and not focused on this," and. You know, I know, like on the cleaning, she'll walk around holding people's hands. Okay, you need to clean this. And she'll put post-its. You need to clean this. Mm-hmm. So my son, and you know, don't talk to him. He said, "Dad, she'll explain to me how to vacuum. And I'll come up here. And she'll walk around with me for like 30 minutes. And it's like, okay, I understand that. And I know she's probably want to make sure it's done right. But part of it is, you know, to your point is it's she has a personality that she just wants to do everything, and I appreciate that, but she can't. I'm just thinking maybe with Andrew we can just say, "Hey, Elizabeth, you need to stay in this lane. We're going to have these other lanes," and I kind of wanted to talk to you before you brought that up, just some of the things I've been seeing.
I'm glad you brought that up because we've had a discussion about her handing off that part of it, the cleaning part to me, so. I'll be picking that up here in the next few weeks. Transition. She's going to step away from that completely. So
at the finance committee meeting last Tuesday, she brought up to the group then she has a need to change.
Okay.
So there's an awareness, and there's a window here to really seize that. So the timing's really good.
Yeah, and she's just great. I appreciate her. Mm-hmm. And for bookkeeping, she's perfect. But you know, she walks around. You know, we should paint that wall, or we need a monitor here. Yeah. And it's like Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why I tell you, hey, jot that down on that sheet. You know, we got a sheet. We're keeping track of that. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and I don't know how to get around that. But maybe with Andrew starting, we can just say, hey. We need to change your focus and do this.
I think a lot of it goes to the previous ministers that were here. And I think it's not necessarily the eldership that's been the problem, because we understand her situation to a point. But the previous ministers understood that if they mentioned it to her, she would take it. And that's what happened with the cleaning. Mm. Well, I'm 100% sure, because it started with Jeff just not being able. Elizabeth, can you take care of this for me?
Well, part of that is
she took it on as soon as he left.
Right, you are correct. And a lot of that is expectations. So Jeff Kreider wanted this to be clean like a museum. You know, it's a level of clean that I thought was excessive. And again, I can understand you want to have a great place for people to come into. But I think, you know, we can dial that down several notches. You know, I think as a leadership, we can just say, here's what our expectations are. You know, keep the toilets flushed and, you know, let's vacuum the carpets kind of a thing. Because I think Kreider really had a high level. But back to your point, yes, I think in 2 months, I hope to be up here and being able to do that and helping out and
One of the big tasks that I think she wants off her plate, and I might ask you to do this, are the thermostats. She's just that's one of the things. She's mentioned that several times, and
I can pick that up.
Okay, good.
I can
that's
do that.
Great.
That's
and
great.
Then the third was building usage.
Yeah, which I'm doing.
I mean, you're taking that on.
Taking
I know.
That on now.
Right. Yeah. So again, I think it's just good timing with me coming on and with Andrew coming on that we can maybe address them. And it's good that she is aware of that. So.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, especially with David going to be out a while, I'm a little concerned.
The thermostat is a big deal.
I'll talk to her
about that. She does love. I'm going to let you tell her.
Yeah.
She'll love her.
Yeah.
We keep adding more and more to you.
Well. That's okay. I mean, Dave gave me 40 hours a week. I can do that.
Yeah.
Now Dave gave me 25 hours a week, and I'm doing about 18 to 20. So I got a few more hours I can do. There was some other things I was doing. I let those things, one of those things, go. I was working with an organization with some young men that needed some help with just daily things. I let that go because it was just too much. And I hated to do that because I felt that. Yeah, anyway. So it's going to free me up to do a few more things here.
And I think it's been very helpful having Steve aware of all this stuff. Because, again, there are a lot of direct and indirect costs with things we do, like facility usage. It's like, so every time there's a meeting, okay, Elizabeth's got another room. She's got to set the time for, okay, what time is it? How do I need to set up the chairs? Because it's not just the time. She's, okay, how do the tables need to be set up? How are the chairs need to be set up? And I'm not saying we don't need to do that, but we need to be aware of none of these usages are free. You know, there's costs associated with it. So,
Is it possible? So CFS uses the fourth floor. You tell them, teach them how to do the heating and cooling, and show them where everything is. They set up, they break down, and so that it's not something that needs to be managed.
I think there are groups that can do that. I think there's other groups, you know, like the people that use the gym, you know, for pickleball and basketball. It's like, you know, I don't know who's going to do it. Who are you going to teach?
Could Ron Orrick.
Ron's rarely here anymore. He's only here once a week, and so the others are.
Right. So I think that's an option for some of these, but again, when I got more time, I can kind of look into that. And
we don't have to set it so cool either.
Right.
I just.
Yeah, and this is where, so I think there's a few different things being on staff that I've noticed about, especially the thermostat piece. One is that every thermostat in this building is different. Mm-hmm. By having different ones, that means that you can't go to the gym and set that one if you only know the one in here. Mm-hmm. You have to know all of them, which is the only reason why Elizabeth sort of knows them, because she was forced to learn them all. And she walks around with her notebook that has all the exact instructions of how to do it, plus then all the times. Mm-hmm. The other is that there's no way to do almost any of them sort of with the ease of an internet. So you have to go to every last one of them manually. And so my main suggestion, we can't tell Tom to do it because Tom will not do it.
Right.
What we have to put in ones that are internet connected. The whole building is mm-hmm. with the internet. We could sit at a computer for 5 minutes, probably mm-hmm. set all of them and be done, where mm-hmm. it takes her 2 hours mm-hmm. being the only one that knows them all to do all of them, because it takes so much and it's all tedious. It would cost us probably, let's say, $1,000.
No, I'm going to guess probably $1,000. It'd be like $15,000.
Change all of the thermostats.
Right. So unfortunately, home thermostats are 12 volt, and we've got a few Nest thermostats here that are on that. Ones out here, they're the commercial grade stuff. And so, and I don't know if I looped you in when we were talking to the furnace people that Tom knows, and I said, hey, when you switch them out for the Wi-Fi stuff, you know, one at a time. And they said, yeah, we can do that, but it's going to be like $1,000 a piece. It's like, well, that's like curses, because we've got, I don't know how many of these 15. Things we got. Yeah, 15. So that's 15,000. Mm-hmm. And so I said, okay, Tom, when we do these, get a bid on what's it going to take to put in a Wi-Fi one, because we can't do them all at once. And so the 12-volt ones, like the home ones, I can replace, and I have. Yeah. But the commercial ones, like the others, I can't do those. So, and so I've got the model numbers and everything, but... that's something that I was looking into.
So just to switch up to the next level of thermostats on the 12 volt, it's $15,000.
Well, $1,500. For the manual ones, no. But for the Wi-Fi one, and I can send you the specifics.
Yeah, because I tried to find the one for, did you remember which one? Was it this one right here?
It was in the office here.
It was this one.
And I'll give you
My numbers were not, they were over $100, I don't think, for just the Wi-Fi one.
And I'll send you the specifics of the ones that we got the bids on. Okay. I can do a lot, but because I was
surprised. Maybe we can't do them, but we would have to get somebody to come in to do it. But it's good. So say we pay them $1,000, we pay $2,000 for the things, for the time that we're saving over a year mm-hmm. may actually
right. So I looked at it a year ago and I'll get you this stuff.
Okay.
And so
Rick Sally do those kind of thermostats?
Yes.
Well, Rick is a great guy. He's like Tom. So Rick mm-hmm. and Tom have the same issue where they're failing fast. Both of them, they're on a logarithmic down curve. Great guy, and I use him for less and less. There's certain things I can have him do, but I can, I'll have him do basic wiring of a switch, but there's certain things. It's like, I had him work at the light system out here for the parking lot lights, mm-hmm. and I had to rewire the whole thing, so fix it. And again, great guy, he's willing to do it, but... he and Tom, I just wouldn't trust either one of them anymore, unfortunately.
Okay.
So I'll get you those numbers.
And Tom's struggle, I think, is he's much more of a traditionalist. That's what I've struggled with him a lot, and he wants to do them by the old book.
Yeah.
As opposed to the way new methodologies work, and that's been a struggle, I think, a lot of times, and... He does great work, but the problem is that getting him to do it and get it timely and
we'll have it for AI soon.
Yes, we'll have an AI bot come in and do it for us.
So we've kind of jumped the rails here, but I will have more free time in a couple months to look at this, and I'll get you the specs on that.
Okay, So we're done with the onboarding and installation service, affirmation service.
Yeah.
Small group ministry reset. We kind of talked some about that. Leaders suggested was the Fergusons and the Sue Karens. Anybody thought any more about that? Who would get to lead that ministry? And this is a pretty important one.
Yeah, and I've been praying about this because, you know, when I retire, one of the things I want to do is get in a, you know, start some discipleship groups, but, you know, something like this, just, you know, small groups, and I might have time to engage in this as well.
Well, we want non-elders to do it, just to be blunt.
Well, I mean, somebody's got to do it, and so I can start doing it, and yeah. So...
I think it would be a failure for us to get one of us to be in charge, which I thought the same thing. I love this.
Well,
I know you'd even mentioned you'd like to do it.
If you look at what we how we started this off, it sure fits into those categories.
Yes, it does.
And so I to me, it seems wherever that list was, you know, it seems like it sure fit into there. So
it's on the agenda.
Yeah. Right, oh, there it is. Yeah. So. Strengthen the weak, praying over the sick, all that sort of stuff. So we can just talk about that. I'm not going to commit, but I might be available.
I think it'd be great if we could get, maybe it's some of those that we're looking at bringing on as elders.
And so if we don't, so one of the things time-wise, so you have a timeline on there. So if we think about it this way, if we start looking at those two couples as being options and people are talking to them, the fact is that September... Not first, but the second week, because the first is actually Labor Day weekend.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to start your small groups on that week, but you'd want it the next weekend. So as the staff member, and I mean, Brett can help out too with some of the thought basis. If we don't have them committed to that point in time, we could start this year out by getting, I mean, for me printing out things, that's what I spend most of my life doing, I think it seems like. Here, but I mean, creating a picture and graphics and stuff like that. Yeah. Nathan and I can get that together and ready for starting, and then they can come in sort of after the fact if their time doesn't fit.
Well,
for that.
We had talked about maybe we start the reset in January because we got too many other things going on.
Yeah.
And what do you all feel about that?
Yeah,
that sounds good to me. The other is, and again, in my head is. I think it needs to start with, you know, you've got your small groups and then you've got your small group leaders. And I think the small group leaders need to find some time, you know, once a month, twice a month, where we get together and pray. And so that could start earlier and just praying and planning. And then, okay, in January, you know, we've had a couple months praying and planning about this and discussing it. Then, you know, we're ready to get that going.
Yeah. There's another document that I didn't print out. It was just about the resetting that, and it's got some different things on there. So,
But I would suggest is that because we sort of stop groups for the summer, we should probably start something.
Yeah, I think so.
In between for the fall. And then that way, I mean, we have lots of new people we've been mentioning for them to get plugged in after the summer. If we say, oh, guess what, we're not going to start till January, that's going to be a big gap for them, I think.
Too. I wonder if we just start like we've done it before. Here are the lists of the people we have, and then maybe in January or February we do something else, or we may decide to wait for another year. I don't know, but something.
And then that way gets Andrew on board, too,
involved
in it, too.
But we got to do something now
to
be ready for September when we do start. So,
sounds good.
Be thinking about that.
I like the notion of inviting the small groups to follow up on the sermon every week. And if they have other ideas of what they want to do, that's absolutely fine. But I think as a default, some group doesn't know what to do. That's always appropriate.
Yeah.
And affirming, anybody who's not there can catch up. Andrew's going to do a lot of these, and he doesn't have to provide an outline. You know, if the leader knows that's what he's going to do on Sunday night or Wednesday, they're on it, should be. And it's pretty straightforward, you know, what scriptures are being read and what you think and main points. And, you know, I think that's an easy default to offer small groups.
Yeah, and if Andrew has something, that's good too.
Yeah.
Some questions.
And I've enjoyed doing that with our small group, and that's gone quite well. And so I like that.
I guess we need to get a list of all the groups.
I got that somewhere on my computer.
Think I have it somewhere too.
Okay. A list of the existing ones, those that are planning on starting, and we just start communicating with the leaders. See, are you planning on doing it? Who's in your list? And then one time we had a list of those that were not in groups and inviting people to invite those. And then also maybe finding a couple new groups.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking off the top of my head, just ideas there. So, okay.
It seemed like the Ferguson stepped away from something.
Fellowship.
Everything, actually.
Yeah.
And so seeing them on this list, I don't know the appropriateness of that.
It's been a year since they dropped out of everything.
Carrie's a lot like Elizabeth. She gets in and she gets all in too much.
Okay.
And that's, so.
Yeah, so last.
So it was the fellowship.
So the family camp was the point at which they became overloaded.
Okay.
And then when Jeff's thing happened that made her stop everything. So at family camp, she stepped down from working at children's ministry because she was just overwhelmed with the family camp and everything. And then by Jeff's fellowship, she's like, okay, I'm done with fellowship at that point. And then from that point forward, she dropped out of pretty much everything except for missions committee.
And she had asked, she wanted to be in charge of the retirement dinner stuff. So she wanted that. And so at that point, she was just pretty much overwhelmed.
Okay. So it's been long enough, you feel like maybe this is a good...
We can definitely ask them if they're interested in stepping back in a little bit.
Well, why don't we wait to ask them till we...
Yeah, at our next meeting, we need to make a decision and maybe somebody get with them and just tell them what our vision is and stuff. Okay. Anything else on the small group ministry reset? All right, let's go down to the future of eldership plan. Okay, Jeff McGlaughan coming in, Don Fitzgerald going out, future elders. We had a six, I believe, here, Bardawell, Kreider, Sue Karen, McPherson, Fuller, and Eichley.
Mm-hmm.
These are just, we didn't make any decisions on any of these. I mentioned that last week. And then I sent you guys an email that had three really good articles. So let me, I printed them out. Sometimes I understand with emails you get on
the email. Put them in our notes from last time. But
yeah. Okay. And and all three of them are really short articles. Yeah. I didn't summarize them at all. But the one on the back, I really... liked about creating a mentorship program or personally I feel like the structure I like our structure, but it doesn't have the content. We've been real passive, just come to our meetings and you'll figure it out. I don't think that's good. And there's a book that is, I've read a couple things, I think it's mentioned in here, Lynn Anderson's They Smell Like Sheep. And then here's another one, Like a Shepherd Lead Us. We may have gotten this for all the elders back about 7 or 8 years ago. I don't remember. But this has got some good stuff. And in fact, the stuff for the Ezekiel 24, I just skimmed it and saw some things in there from the Heart of a Shepherd. I thought about photocopying it and scanning it and send it to everybody. I read the first couple chapters. It's a couple pages that looked really good. So maybe in doing a mentoring, structuring a little more with whoever we bring in, and maybe going through a book, and maybe it's all of us. I think it wouldn't hurt for all of us even to read one of the books, and then one or two guys meet with each one and go through it, or some kind of structure that we would have with this. I think would be a good thing to do. So that's something we can think about, and having a timeline. And as we look at these, we
having somebody going through a mentorship program. I don't think we need one for Kreider. He knows eldering.
He does.
I think, and I think people would understand, we could skip that with him because he's been eldering for 30 years.
Mm-hmm. Do we want to talk about these candidates now?
Well, I think we need to. I would like to start back at the top. So Jeff McGlaughan and Don Fitzgerald. So at the last meeting, there was discussion, and the way I understand it was landing is it would probably be good to announce them together. Hey, congregation, the elders have spent time with Jeff. Jeff spent time with the elders. We recommend him. And then I thought we're going to say at the same time, you know, Don Fitzgerald, you know, he's been with us a long time, and Q4, you know, sometime Q4 he's going to be leaving. And again, I thought we wanted to do this before Andrew or anybody started, you know.
October 1st is what we thought. I thought we said.
Well, we talked about it. I just want to make sure. We talk about a lot of things, and I just want to make sure that my understanding is correct. That's kind of what I put in the notes, is that's how we're going to do it, announce them both at the same time, right? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, is that?
And I thought October 1st was when Don was stepping down, as opposed to when he was being announced. I don't know if you would want to say do the announcement early or...
Right. Yeah, so. Well, that's a good mapping it out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. The pluses and minuses, but it's good to talk about. Typically, we don't, you know, give folks a month's notice. We just let them know that, you know...
Right.
At the end of the month, Don will, or something. Maybe that happens in September.
You need to talk to Don.
That's right.
Right.
He's free until...
And that, you know, make people aware that he's still going to be here, still going to be involved in all kinds of things. But
He's still going to shepherd, formality. But not going to meetings. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just basically...
Yeah. And so...
And I think he might want to get up and communicate that, because he wants to make sure people don't think he's leaving, or that he's angry, or... upset about anything.
Right, and so the sensitivity to Andrew's onboarding and Jeff's onboarding, that there isn't anything inferred.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people fill in the gaps if we don't. So whatever that needs to look like, it would be deliberate. And if that can happen at the same time, that's all good. If Andrew's starting August 10th, then maybe it's mid-September that we let folks know at the end of the month Don is done, and you know, Jeff's coming on board, or we put the name out there.
Well, that's
and you
right.
Get back to us.
Right, and
that's
so
right.
That's the other is, put the name out there, and I don't know, I would give him a couple of weeks. I wouldn't give it too long, and then we have to plan, you know, your installation service. And so, I think we just need to think through that. Just give him a couple of weeks, and, you know,
let's look at the rest of these guys.
Yeah.
Let's look at Kreider first.
Sorry, Steve. I think we had, it was even my suggestion, it's probably not ideal as I listen to this conversation, is that Don would be kind of the lead elder working with Andrew.
Yeah.
And so if he's stepping down in October, that may not be ideal, because that only gives him, you know, some continuity there, then all of a sudden that's gone. And so we may want to think about somebody else taking that role.
Can he still do that?
He can still do it, but he won't be doing it in the elder capacity. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think he'd be great at it, you know, but one of the advantages of having the elder is that we get the, you know, regular feedback.
Yeah.
And we don't want the burden down with that. You know, those are elder responsibilities. And so we'll get the feedback at the meeting, we get the feedback emails and things like that. So we may want to think about, do we still want to continue let Don do that and then just let him do it in the capacity outside of the eldership, or do we want one of us to be in that role? So,
it does seem like the plus of an active elder is they're also going to be at the elder meetings when Andrew's there, and seeing that info and that dynamic, I think, is valuable.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if Don doesn't get that and he's trying to
mentor,
I don't know.
Maybe for the first month and a half. So if you think about timing-wise, so if Don steps down October 1st, that gives him the whole month of September and the first of the 2 weeks of August.
Mm-hmm.
And that at least gets some of his perspective into it.
Mm-hmm.
And then Andrew will also know that it's not because of Andrew that he's stepping down, because of the time he's putting into sort of building that relationship. And then
as Don is sort of stepping down, it doesn't mean he doesn't keep relationship with Andrew, but that relationship of a mentor sort of starts to slide to somebody else at that point, sort of giving enough time for the others to breathe in between time.
We could ask Don to step away early November, give him another month with Andrew.
That would be
good. That could be good, too.
That's not going to bother Don from what he said.
Don's okay with that. That will probably be good.
I think it'd be good to space out the change stuff. Yeah. And then that would also, so the same, maybe the middle of October, announce the church about you, and then have your affirmation in November, first part of November.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the last, ask you this. If Jeff is willing, do we bring him on at the same time we bring Jeff on?
So I'm
confused on Jeff's. What are we talking about?
Jeff Kreider
along with Jeff McGowan.
I keep going back to what we've heard from our people that, you know, you needed to create
a liminal period.
Yeah.
I'd like to advocate that Jeff Kreider will be a very strong elder someday.
Mm-hmm.
I would advocate strongly that Andrew gets a whole year without Jeff Kreider as an elder. And Jeff gets a whole another year to figure out his retirement.
Right.
And his role in, you know, like let him do this leadership thing that he's doing. And that feels healthy to me with like the advice of the liminal period, let that continue. If Jeff does a sermon or two during that year, you know, things like that. And Andrew might want to pick Jeff's brain, you know. Learn about the congregation. That role can just kind of mature a little bit. That feels
That feels good to me. Yeah. How about the rest of you guys?
Yeah.
And it could be that the timing is these other people that are doing mentorships with, it goes for a year and then it's all at the same time. Who knows? I'll figure that out.
And Jeff, he was half kidding, but he was like, I don't know if I want to be an elder because he knows.
Right.
Like you said. And so I don't know.
Yeah, I talked with him. And he's like, he was ambivalent, but more on the positive side.
Okay. Yeah. That's good.
And when
when
I left youth ministry, I took a few years before, and I was asked right when I got out, I would start CFS. I said I need a break, and that break was really good.
I think good. That's good hindsight.
I would hope somebody, I don't know if it's you, would talk to Kreider about this and explain the situation that, you know, it's nothing personal. We just need some room that we think you're a great guy, and
because
I'm sure Jeff is. If nobody's reached out to him, it's like, you know, what's going on here? You know, we still value his experience and his insight.
Yeah. I've talked with him.
Okay.
And I think, and he's, even the book club, they had a retreat, a lot of the wives, and they asked Becky if they were going to be staying, and she said, well, it depends on if it's best with the new minister coming in. So they're very sensitive about that. So,
I'll continue on the list here. We have had a discussion about potential elders who have previously been divorced, and one woman man, and what that means. And I'm on board with the decision that we made. However, I feel that it's a whole separate discussion of what our congregation is ready for and how do we get them ready. And I'm feeling like there needs to be some training and education in order for our congregation to be where we are on that decision. And so I don't want to just plow forward without being sensitive and deliberate about that. I don't have a good idea what that I want that to look like, but I think when I think about where our congregation is, there's going to be a struggle, and I think there's things we can do about that. So that's affects McPherson and Fuller on the list right away.
How do we do that? how do we educate? Having a Bible class? And then who shows up?
Well, I would like to discuss the concept first. And I've gone back and forth in my head on this. And you know, we present them to the congregation. The congregation's going to say, hey, you know, I know this and that. I don't like this and that. Now, when they presented you as an elder, did they go through the list and say, you know, Dave struggled with drinking in his youth. You know, Dave had these issues and these sins. And it's like, no, right? And so, it sounds like we're going to say, these sins we're going to call out. You know, this person we're presenting as an elder was divorced. And so again, we all come into this flawed with sins. They're not itemized, right? You know, we're put before the congregation and, you know, what do you guys think about us? And then, and so again, I'm not saying what we have to do, but I just don't know how best to handle this. I'm just thinking there's no way to get everybody on board with all of this. And so not to say that you can just bury your head in the sand, but right. I don't want to have a class and then say, okay, let's talk about Eric McPherson's sins in his past, and then is he eligible to be an elder kind of a thing. It's just awkward. They didn't do it for me, thankfully. But and so I don't know about that. That's where some of my questioning is.
Yeah, I don't envision saying, you know, well, we put Eric's name or we announce that he's sitting in on the group for a while as a potential. And those who know he's been divorced are going to share with others who didn't know.
Right.
And that's going to sweep through, and then you've got all these different opinions. And it's like, let's not let that happen. Let's do some training on where we are generically. And if then we have to wait a year to invite these guys to join us or something, whatever, I don't know. But that's what I would like to avoid because, you know,
I wonder if you have
see that is what's going to happen, and if they're, you know, why spring it on them?
You have a class talking about eldership, and you bring up the husband of one wife along with all the other qualities. That not work. Just focus on that one.
Yeah, and just that's run through good. It real quick. Mm-hmm. And because, again, you know, people are going to have an opportunity to give their feedback on this. But I like that idea where you don't call out a specific sin or quality or default and just...
We just like, right, okay, this is...
Right, because and I do think it's good for the congregation to understand what an elder is anyway.
Yeah. So time-wise, we could do that before I'm put into the spot. Because, so I mean, because that's usually when most churches talk about it, when they're getting ready to put a new elder in, they have either sermons on it or they have a Bible class on it. And we could push that and let everybody know, hey, this is what we're putting Jen Jeff, sort of replacing Don. We're also looking for the future too. And we're going to have this class and we're going to talk through this because, hey, Matthew, we would really like you to think about this as being something you're qualified for. Hey, Eric, we wanted to talk to you because there's one thing about feeling qualified yourself. Mm-hmm. There's another thing about other people thinking you're qualified. Mm-hmm. And there's another thing of convincing everybody else that you are really that person. Mm-hmm. And so I think that maybe that's the option. And whether it's before me or after me, that's, and I mean, we have next week, we have the Christian formation. And and we really have an open spot because Dave was going to teach a class. Yeah. We can take over that whole, and Don's teaching the Romans class. So we could potentially take some of Romans away from Don and put it in that little spot there for the fall. Mm-hmm. And Don could teach before and after, whatever, but sort of having like a 1 month class on the eldership.
Yeah. And just that class only. I think we can do it with just so that way we can encourage the entire congregation to be a part of it. So just have it for the month.
Well, here's an idea I was thinking of, which I want to meet with you for 10 minutes, talk about the Christian formation. I talked with Betty Vaughn about something my wife and I, a book we've been reading and I really like. It's called Unoffendable. And she said, well, we have an opening. Do you want to teach it in September? And I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess I could. And so maybe I could do just, because I was debating on doing 6 weeks, just half of the quarter, mm-hmm. and then getting somebody else to do half a quarter, just having two shorter ones. But maybe instead we have a 8 week, Don has 8 weeks and with Romans, that, and then that leaves November, and then we could go with the end of November, the first part of December, so we're going from October to go to December to have that, and then in November have the
And really, class. December, we usually don't have a lot of classes, so just because of the thing, so it, really, that's where we've talked about too, that it's like sort of you have these odd gaps because of the holidays. So, I mean, it could be a 3 week class on the eldership that sits right in November. Mm-hmm. And then after that, there's no real classes. There may be a class or two for just random things, mm-hmm. but nothing official.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then it wouldn't be until January the new classes start, like mm-hmm. we did this year.
Mm-hmm. Which could work. So then nice backing up 35,000 feet, mm-hmm. we. One of the first steps is Don leaves, resigns, retires. Mm-hmm. Jeff comes in. So the way we do that is that happens the 1st of December. Mm-hmm. We do a class on elderships in November. Mm-hmm. During that time, we let them know what our plan, our two-phase plan. One is to bring Jeff in. He's been meeting with us for over a year. Don's going to leave. And the phase two is we're wanting to bring in some younger guys. Our desire mm-hmm. is to bring in some younger guys. And in,
well, Eric's older than me. Jeff's older than me.
Charles is older. Yeah.
Chris is older by a year. Charles is older than me.
I know. That's a problem.
So, but so that's another thing I thought about this week a little bit is this idea of eldership. So the idea of it's sort of odd that as Don is leaving – I mean, Brad, you guys are both about the same age, aren't you? So,
I'm 3 years older.
Oh, are you? Yeah. So you guys are really the elders in the group in reality. So a lot of times we've become that elders sort of retire. So Keaton and mm-hmm. Steve and that have already retired to a point, they've now become really the elders mm-hmm. of the group. Mm-hmm. And we've sort of have started pushing towards younger people to fill those roles, mm-hmm. which is strange in some mentality of the way you look through scripture. And of course we've removed sort of that deacon role that maybe would have fit that other time frame, mm-hmm. but we've also given a lot more tasks to the elders that in reality, if you think about an elder, they would not really be doing all that many tasks. Mm-hmm. Their job is praying and leading the congregation, mm-hmm. as opposed to working on the roof and taking right. care of the other deacon, building deacon usage. Stuff, and
so with all that, what are you thinking about as far as being your age and being an elder?
My wife drops dead tomorrow, I'm out. So I kind of always wanted to be like Caleb, you know, let's go take on the giants. And God's blessed me with a lot of things in life, and I thrive on, you know, helping people, and that's what I'm doing now. And I enjoy that. I hate what it takes sometimes. And I got up at 4 a.m. this morning, and I'm sitting here hurting.
Yeah.
truth is, I don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. Mm-hmm. I just want to people.
But I would encourage you to think about, I mean, you can help people without being an elder.
Oh, yeah.
And just think about what you would like to do, writing your own script for being or retiring as an elder.
I think, to me, it's a calling, and I felt that calling deeply here. Mm-hmm. And God hasn't told me it's time to go yet. Mm-hmm. So I'm open to whatever the Spirit leads, and I have no doubt that, you know, my time's getting shorter and shorter.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'll be honest, you know, to me, bringing in people who are divorced, I think is going to set up a problem for the church. But, you know, that's something that the majority has decided. So, mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah. I guess, you know, I appreciate your thoughts and you know, when we think about future elders, my one question is, so there are six of us, and to me the a good number is five, you know. So we're talking about 11, and so I, in my mind, you're going to get diseconomies. You're, you know, it's going to
just like 12. I mean,
yeah. and so I don't know what number are we looking for. You know, again, if people are going to ready to, are going to roll off, you know, like, you know, Brad or somebody, but I don't hear that. I don't know. It seems like to have one or two sitting in is a good idea, but again, I don't know. To me, five is a good number. 11 just seems, I don't know how you get anything done.
Well, see, that's where I think having more, you can work more with having vision elders, admin elders, pastoral elders. And like now we're so small where we can't function like that as much as we did before. And that way we divide and conquer. That's why I like the idea of having a few more so that we don't have to spend all of our time talking about things with the building. We let a couple guys that are doing it, they do it and come back and let us know what they've decided and then get input from us. We may think, no, that's not a good idea, but then we don't have to spend so much time meeting, talking about some, like, and even admin stuff.
Right.
You know.
If it's done with a plan like that, I can see it. But you know, I don't know what other people's thoughts were, but more people doesn't necessarily make meetings better.
But so, they could if we organize them.
Right, better. If we have some kind of a structure.
Yeah.
And that's it. It's like, you know, what skills are we looking for? What kind of people are? But, you know, if we have a way to break it out, I think that would be useful.
Mm-hmm. Well, my observation is we beat ourselves up tremendously, repeating the same things over and over, and we need to make decisions as a group, and I think it could be done more efficiently.
It's hard to be efficient making a decision with the group on anything. It really is.
Yeah.
And that's why having dividing up and then coming together and putting together the plan, just like with the stuff Steve and I put together. If we would have tried to put together an onboarding plan or the affirmation plan together
by committee,
it would have been hard. But you know, we put that stuff together, brought it, and we spent a lot of time on the affirmation thing because people wanted it a certain way, and that was, I think that was healthy for that. But for other things like staff things, you know, he can just tell us what they came up with, and things with the parking lot. You know, I don't think we need to have a whole lot of emails and decisions with everybody's given input, just people that are invested and know what they're talking about. I don't.
So what are you guys' thoughts on elder size?
I think I'm just going to trust the Holy Spirit on it, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to say that this number is ideal because I don't know what the ideal number is, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. Because what I do want to do, I want to get behind God's plan, whatever His plan is for this church. If He bring four capable men that he deems elders ready, well, then they should be a part of this group. Mm-hmm. That's not my decision to decide on how many God is getting ready for this group. And so that's my approach on it. And then those men will bring things to the table that we probably could not have conceived, you know, with this group. And so my thought is that whatever man God has prepared for the eldership, I want to receive them with open arms.
David? Yeah, I think there's a natural ebb and flow to the size of the eldership group. Mm-hmm. And so if five is the most ideal efficient, we will never have one drop off about the same time as the next guy comes on board. And so we were swollen to 12, and I think that served us well after the merger for a really good stretch. Mm-hmm. And then we're doing fine without, but I do think bringing more on board, getting some subcommittee structure going is the way to deal with when you have that many. And then when that naturally wanes because folks age and there isn't another obvious candidate, we're going to be back down to five. And so for all we know, if we can get back up to nine or so, that's for 5 years. We're setting up the next, you know, healthy so the guys can roll off as we age and have heart surgeries and things like that.
Yeah. Or go move to where your granddaughter is.
Yeah. And so I think there's a natural ebb and flow that we try to maximize where we are because the Holy Spirit's going to see two turns ahead that we don't. Okay. So that doesn't bother me to have a bigger number.
Yeah, and I think that my thoughts go towards the size of the congregation as well. So I know that when we merged, we were sitting at 300 and almost 400 at times, depending on if everybody showed up on any given Sunday. Yeah. And at that point, 12 is a good number, or 11. I think 12 is what we had actually when we first started. And so that was a prime number for our 400-person congregation. Did it function properly? Maybe not. I don't know what caused the congregation to dwindle other than just the merger itself and the vast variations. And it's interesting that the eldership sort of shrunk as the membership shrunk.
Mm-hmm.
None of the elders left the congregation, really. Like, they never said, hey, we don't agree with this, and left. It was usually death or it was retirement and things like that. And so it's just a very interesting, just as I've been watching from the, observing from a right. church picture.
So what's your thought?
So I think that we're probably at an okay spot, but it would not hurt for us to be bigger.
Okay.
Because we would like the congregation to be bigger. Mm-hmm. And so we have to set ourselves up for mm-hmm. being able to minister towards the congregation that we're wanting it to be. As opposed to saying, hey, we're just going to have four of us or three of us and expect to be able to handle it, or five of us even, because we're still going to then struggle if we want it to be bigger than what we are currently. Say if we want to get up to another 100 more in our congregation, as five of us, we're still going to struggle. We're going to struggle even more than we are now just because of the extra work that's overburdening everybody. And then as they get to the point of retirement, you're not going to find anybody to come in to take that spot as easy, because it's a lot of work. Just like how trying to fill Jeff's spot, we're having Steve filling stuff, and we're having the new person, and maybe you having to come in to...
So what is the work?
Anything and everything. So that's where we have to determine what the elder's job is.
Yeah. Right, and so that's what I'm getting to. It's like, how many people do you need for that? Yeah. And if it's parsed out where an elder is expected to shepherd a certain number of people, okay, I can see where we're going on this, and I think that makes sense, but more work is ambiguous, and so it's kind of hard for me to get a handle around this. But I think what we're hearing is, you know, I can live with, you know, 7-8,
but, I wonder, you know. Okay, so for me the lines become a little blurry in terms of deacon role, elder role. Mm-hmm. And so how much of what I've been doing the last year and a half have been more, you know, elder's role or versus some other role? And, you know, I'm not sure. I can't answer that question accurately, to be honest with you. And so I'm wondering, do we need more elders, or do we need some other form of leadership, right? That some of the things where we can do more better define what our role should be.
Yeah.
And I think some of the things I'm doing now, probably, I'm not talking about what I'm doing in the office, I'm talking about even outside of that, probably, is it really the best use of my time, or would there be some other person, not that I'm, you know, have all these answers, would there be some other person that can take on some of these things and allow me to focus more on shepherding, right? Getting with family, spending time with family. I don't do as much of that as I probably should. I know I don't. Mm-hmm. And part of that is because I'm busy doing other things. And so I ask myself the question, do we need more elders, or do we need more leaders to do more some of the things that we're doing right now?
Yeah.
And I think we need to define what that is. What it is that we see God's calling us to do as an eldership. What are those things? And so, and are we doing those things? Or and if we're not able to do those things because we have the capacity, can we bring on some other leaders to do some of those things so that we can focus on elder responsibility?
And the pastoral team that we put together was a great idea. Yeah. But why did we do that? Yeah. Because we were doing too many.
Yeah, we should be doing pastoral stuff.
We were doing too many non-elder things.
Yeah. Some of the things that they're doing is should be us doing that, right? And so that's a great example of probably maybe where I should be spending more of my time doing some
and
of those
things. And one of the problems we have as elders is we have servant hearts. Mm-hmm. That's why we're doing a lot of this, which is a great problem, mm-hmm. but we have to probably figure out. And I guess, and also being retired now, it's different for me. I can do the fence. That's not an, I didn't do it because I'm an elder. You know, Don and I did it because we like doing that kind of stuff and we can do that. But we...
Those are called talents.
Yeah, okay, mm-hmm. we call them that, yeah. If you saw it, really saw it, you wouldn't say it was a talent.
You guys did a great job. The timing was lousy, though, because I had the appraisal done after you guys did it.
Oh, did you?
I had it appraised before you did the work.
Oh, yeah.
Our taxes just went up because of that. These are good questions. And again, there's things in theory and then there's things in practice. And that's the tricky thing. And I don't know how to manage that.
And one more thing is having younger elders helps some of the younger members feel like there's an ear that'll listen to their younger voice. That's not verbalized, but there is, I think, part of that when, you know, looking, we're in our 60s and we're not getting younger. And I think 66 is pretty young, but it's not, it's close to 70. And you've got the, Kaz Grimshaw's, you know, there's a big gap there, and he might feel better talking to a Bardowell than a Watcher because of the age, and he can identify
somebody
more with what he might
feel better by. Yeah. Yeah, you go.
Yeah, thank you. I want some of that too. Okay, what's our summary here for future eldership plans?
So, did we go through that list? Because Kreider's checked off, at least for a year. I think we talked about Eichley, that he's been approached before. Not that we can't approach him again, but he's against it. I am against Chris Fuller because of the child issue. I think that's maybe a bridge too far for me.
Okay.
Having a stepdaughter?
Well, having not raised a child, I guess. That I think there's a difference to me. I think... You know, if he had stepchildren, you know, real young, and he raised them, but I don't know that that's the story there. No. So I would have to. And I think the reason why it's in the scriptures because there are certain things in parenting that are important to know about being an elder, and you learn those through the lifespan of a child.
And we got to be careful being legalistic about that, because then we come back to each of us, where are our children in their faith?
Right.
And I think that's, I think we got to step back and see, okay, is he full of the Spirit?
Well, would you say that a couple without children, a man could be eligible?
Well, we're not talking about that. We're talking about a couple that... As a child.
No, I just want to take you to the extreme of what you're saying, if you're being legalistic, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're not being legalistic, you can say, a couple without a child should be eligible. And some churches do that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel comfortable with that because I think the role of parenting is crucial in understanding a lot about the gospel story and about just... dealing with people in their lives. Yeah. That's my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And I may not be right, but that's why I would be uncomfortable. And I think that's why that criteria is in there. And so I would...
I guess you can go people that have children, but they are not faithful now. Are they eligible to be parent, to be elders?
Well, the way I've always understood it is, and Dale Lundy preached on this. This was 45 years ago. I still have the sermon at home. So, are the children respectful? Did they get in trouble? You know, how did he raise these kids? And so that's kind of how he lined it up, and that kind of makes sense to me.
So you're saying they don't have to be believers, and
that's how he explained it, and that makes sense to me.
I think if you're teaching your kids, I think ultimately they have free will, you know.
Right.
And as a parent, if you're teaching your kids, you're pointing them in direction of Christ. I think that's what we're called to do. Now, your child may choose not to follow in that direction, but if you as a parent, if that's what you're doing, that's how you're instructing that child, but he or she is choosing not to follow that instruction, that's not on the parent.
That's how I understand
it.
Yeah,
it's not on the parent, yeah.
And it's more drastic today than I think it ever has. Our culture is, I've got kids that were in a youth group that I never dreamed they wouldn't be going to church.
Right.
And I got one youth group that they were my dream team. Only two of them are going to church now.
Mm-hmm.
I see, you know, Dale Robinson's son, Keith.
Right.
Oh man, that guy was awesome.
Yeah.
He's not going to church now.
Hmm.
And just, I think just our culture
right.
is hmm. really
hmm.
done some yeah. really things. Satan has really gotten in and had a lot of things there. So anyway, we're maybe getting...
Yeah, so anyway, that's my view on it. And that's why I think, Chris, I just wouldn't feel comfortable with that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know about the rest of the group, but...
Think about. So it sounds like we're going to. Are we going to approach the people we identify before the November class, so they can be thinking about themselves in the context of taking the class, or do we? What's the thought process on that as well?
That's a good question.
I would say after the class makes a lot more sense.
Okay.
Doesn't mean we can't have some conversations like with Charles, you know, hey, we approached you before, is that going to be on your radar?
Yeah.
Or mm-hmm. do you feel a call, has your mind changed? There's nothing wrong with a conversation like that.
Well, and even Eric McPherson, he had said about a year ago, he said, I don't want to be an elder.
Right.
So I'd have to go to him and say, do you really want to be an elder? Or not.
Yeah.
And Leon Sukaran, I don't know him at all.
Yeah, with Leon, I'm looking for where he has led. Likes being on the tech team,
mm-hmm.
husband, father, member, all that's really good.
Mm-hmm.
And so, where is he shepherding? I don't know the role he plays in a small group. When they came to our small group, he didn't have a very large role other than participant. And so I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking for that.
Yep.
Where he's shepherding. And then we ask him to come on board kind of thing. I'm not mm-hmm. seeing.
Yep.
But open to where you guys have seen that.
I haven't seen it either. He's to me, he's a candidate that if we had some other level of leadership
mm-hmm.
that we can prepare him to see if he can step up to that role and if he see himself in that role and he can do well in that role, then I think there needs, for some of these people, not necessarily on this list, there seems to be an interim step. And he's one of those guys in my mind that, you know, there's a lot about him that's there that seems untested, and we want to see if he can summons that up and come up to the role. And I think that will be a fair thing to do for him too, because it's a leap to ask him to come from where he's at now to jump into the eldership.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But if we can figure out a way to help him in some other way to take a lesser leadership role, but still a leadership role, and help them to kind of begin to think them through some of these things as a leader, and to see if that's something that he see himself in the long run to become an elder.
Maybe that small group leader, small group ministry leader, maybe the place to start him at. Because it's a very light role to a point, other than the part of if you were doing any training. So Dale did not really do that piece of it. But I know Jeff was probably the last one that had done some training. Dale had sent out a book to everybody, but but really it's getting everybody on board. And if and there's people around him that could help. So both Steve, myself, and Brett, we could help with sort of focusing him or helping him if he needs help.
And there's some online, maybe iPhone heard me talking about it, and I'm automatically, I'm getting some training things, emails about small groups and others.
That's one of those ministries that can become whatever you want it to become, right? You can, if you're involved in a small group leader, you can get so involved in the lives of people if you choose to, or you can stay on a perimeter and just try to motivate the leaders to do the job. So that's one of those roles where if you're engaging with leaders and they're talking to you about the different things that are going on in their small group, you might say, let's you and I get with that person and pray with them, right? So it gives you the opportunity to do that. Or you can just take a different position on that and say, all right, here's something. What are you going to do about it? You know. Okay, that sounds great. So there's, I think that role will allow a person to do a lot or a little, you know, and it'll expose really kind of where they are in terms of their preparedness for taking those next steps.
Yeah. It sounds like we've come to a consensus with Leon of maybe testing him by possibly going into the small group leader and see how he does with that, lead that. Do we just ask him, or do we ask him and Melanie both as a couple? Oh, if we decide, well, I'm getting ahead of ourselves here.
Yeah, I think small groups, we kind of kick that can down, so I think we've got time on that one.
Yeah.
So we're left with Bardawell, McPherson, and Eichley, right, on the list?
Bardawell. I mean, he seems like very solid, very good foundation spiritually.
We approached him previously, too, and got a no thank you right now.
Yeah.
Right? Don't know if that's been a couple of years
His kids are young.
Yeah.
But...
Yeah, and he's probably 10 years younger than I am.
Yeah.
No, he probably just turned 40 or around 41, 42 at the most. Mm-hmm. He is a bit more strict on literal passages. So he's going to struggle with young kids. He's going to struggle with the idea of not all these kids are believers yet. I mean, because they're young. I mean, so, and I think that that's where he's going to sit at before he would make a decision like that. David, I believe, has been baptized. So I think that that's where the youngness of it, but he's getting older. So, I mean, that's the time. So, and it's maybe that thing of finding another ministry for him to fit into and to drive with. But he struggles, not really, that's not, the family struggles in the situation that Rachel's hours are very tough.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In that she usually is working the 12-hour shifts, if not more, in a row, which is leaving him with the kids a lot of time. So meetings, so he's just sort of officially on the Christian formation, but has never been to one of the meetings.
Oh, wow.
Just, it's been a long time, so... because of the hours, like her hours and the kids' things and his things, it just makes it where he's able to input other ways, but it's hard. So like with this meeting, I couldn't see him being at, unless they were able to figure out how to refine her schedule to be off on every other Monday so that she could be home with the kids. Because they still have a 10-year-old or 10-ish. Samuels are around 10, I guess.
Okay. No, that's a good observation. So,
We're getting back down to your number now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it doesn't hurt to talk with them. I wouldn't mind. I can still have a conversation with them. I can talk with them.
Yeah.
But it's low probability is what the expectation is.
The thing is that it time has gone by, though.
Yeah. Right.
So life is getting different. Mm-hmm. David will soon turn 16.
Mm-hmm.
So that will change a lot of the influence on him having to be the sole driver of everybody.
Yeah.
So that's definitely something that may change life, and he'll feel, hey, I have a 16-year-old that's soon to be. So that's definitely changing life.
Yeah. He certainly has a lot of talent that I'd love to see his.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Make use of. But I think, like you said, having him come along and see if he thinks he can, do something. And I've seen Rachel being much more involved than in the past, too.
Me too.
Yes.
Me too.
Yeah. So I think, they're both really good people.
Mm-hmm.
And,
maybe a touch base with him, Brett, just because it's been a little while.
I can, yeah.
And then encourage whatever ministry he does want to dive deeper into, whether it's the youth group, because that's where his kids are, or something,
mm-hmm.
but would love to encourage whatever leadership he's drawn to do as he grows and thrives. That's a pretty cool message to give him.
Yeah. So, Steve, you going to reach out to Eric?
Let's talk about Eric.
Okay.
I have hesitated a lot with Eric in the past.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like he lacks some discernment, but that's a very subjective thing. That could mean he made decisions that I wouldn't make, But I've thought about this a lot, and I think our eldership would be stronger with him there than if he wasn't there.
Mm.
I think working as a team, if it was just two or three elders and he was one, I would hesitate with that, but being 5, 6, 7,
mm-hmm.
be good. And he's already shepherding a large portion of our church.
Mm-hmm.
They got a small group that's not small.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of the, I'm going to use this term, I don't mean it, the misfits.
Mm-hmm.
Fringes.
They're probably better.
Yeah, that's better, yeah. Misfits was my 1997 youth group. And the fringes, and he's worked very well with them.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got some wisdom. He's got talent,
a lot
of talent. And so I'm very much for Eric. Okay. I think he would make our church better and our eldership better if he was an elder.
Okay.
And it took me a while to get to that point.
Okay.
Has he been the lead at CFS for 1 year, a little more than a year now?
2.5 years.
2.5.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was quick. Wow.
Mm-hmm. That's fun fast.
Yeah.
So, okay. I was looking for an excuse to give him another year. Because I'm coming around to where I'm learning to appreciate Eric more and more over time. And have had good conversations with him on more than one occasion about some heavy things, and so.
And there's times that he's been passionate that comes across as being arrogant. For example, the Shelley Crum, Shelley Gregory thing, he came up, talked to the elders, and actually, I think he was probably more accurate looking back at it now than what I thought then, but he was very passionate about that, but he came across kind of arrogant when he talked to the elders about that. I don't know if you remember that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought about Eric, and I think different than him on a few things, but that's good, like you said, he's, I would guess, of the people at this table, going to be a slightly more liberal than most of us on some issues, but that might be good to challenge us again. But the other thing I thought of is, if we have reservations about Eric as an elder, then why would we allow him to preach and teach? So that was one of it, is we get him up there often, and it's like, well, if we're comfortable letting him do that, then why would we not feel comfortable having him at this table? And so, and I thought, I've always thought he's done a good job. And like you're saying, I think he connects with the congregation. And mm-hmm. so I think that would be good too.
And I think it'll be safer because he has, as an elder, he has to have a voice of an elder, yeah. our shepherd's contract, you know, right. covenant that we have and all right. that. He has to understand and go with that.
Yeah.
He has been, he stated clearly that he felt if anybody would leave because as a divorced individual he became an elder, that would not be anything he could right. stomach if he thought that would happen. And I appreciate that. You know, that's not worth it. He can serve without pushing anybody away if that's where we are. So, you know, talking to him about his feelings and everything and knowing there's some teaching coming and all that, you know, mm-hmm. but then also him coming alongside us for a good while mm-hmm. is our routine also raises my comfort mm-hmm. level. So what's that guy, man? How's that going to play out for the next 6 months, you know?
Well, and that's good. It signals things. And again, telling Jeff Kreider, hey, we don't want you here for a year signals one thing, but telling them, hey, we are eager for that year to pass quickly so you're sitting at this table because you've got a lot of gifts to give us, mm-hmm. that signals something else. And even if it's like prom. Girls don't want to go to prom. They just want to be invited. And so there is something to, you know, Eric, hey, you know, we see something in you we really respect. You know, we would like you to sit here. And okay, you can turn us down, but I think it signals something that I think is important. And the same thing with Leon is, Leon, you know, we see leadership potential and, you know, start thinking about leading a small group, those kinds of things. So I think even if they're not ready or skittish, then I think it's just signals something and that we need to encourage people and poke them as much as we can.
Okay, so we're going to talk to Bartowell. We're going to talk to Kreider and say in another year, we want him to have just some space and just a mm-hmm. retirement. But we really want him now, but we thought it'd be best for him and the church if we wait a year. Somebody going to talk to Sue Leon?
I can talk to him when he gets back. Okay. And that conversation is, you know, would you be willing to step into some small group leadership and taking on some of those things?
Yeah. Okay. I can talk to McPherson if you want me to. If we decided that.
Brad, do you want to give your comments? If I heard you.
Yeah. I've probably known Eric longer than anybody.
No, I've known him longer.
He and Cindy used to babysit our kids, and one time we were going to make him the guardians of our children. Hmm. And when that blew apart, you know, I was in the group that said, well, you know, he can't be, you know, in that position anymore. So, you know, I was voted to fire him, along with the rest of the elders that, you know, was divorced. I think the fact that, you know, he and Elizabeth was a godsend, you know, was at his wedding, and he asked me to even speak and part of that, and, you know, I've been with him, believe it or not, back in the days when I usually went up and down a court and we pray together, and, you know, so I have a love for Eric, but I also have seen things that he has done that I go, ooh, mm-hmm. I think this is contrary to the will of God. Mm-hmm. And so I told him that, you know, being an elder is a calling, and I don't think he's qualified in the sense that biblically, you know, what we talked about, but I'm also concerned that his view of the world is different than my view of the world mm-hmm. in terms of other things. I think having, this is, I don't know if you should say it, but I mean, his wife being here is also going to be kind of a situation where, you know, I think it'll be difficult, mm-hmm. and I don't know how that's going to play out.
Yeah.
So, those are my concerns. I love him. I love Elizabeth. But I see the sides of what people are. And I think my concept of the kingdom is that, you know, every one of us is a priest. And just because, you know, they've suffered the divorce, it is something that, you know, sit here and just look when we were talking about how do we know? Well, in Titus, the words of Paul are, I left you behind in Crete for this reason, so that you should put in order what remained to be done and should appoint elders in every town as I directed you. Someone who is blameless, married only once, whose children are believers, not accused of debauchery and not rebellious. For a bishop, as God's steward, must be blameless. He must not be arrogant or quick-tempered or addicted to wine or violent or greedy for gain, but he must be hospitable, a lover of goodness, prudent, upright, devout, and self-controlled. He must have a firm grasp of the word that is trustworthy in accordance with the teaching, so that he may be able to both preach with sound doctrine and to refute those who contradict it. And some of the things that I've heard from Eric, I don't think has been sound doctrine in the past. So that's
what are some of the of those things?
He has had groups that are, I think a lot of it is I would say more liberal approaches to life than what I see in scripture.
Mm-hmm.
And so
it's hard to, because I felt the same thing, and then after I've talked with him, his conviction and his methods seemed opposed, just like homosexuality. He thinks that's wrong, but he is he's accepting. In fact, in my mind, I'll just tell you what goes on in my mind. I was just thinking that's not right, but in my mind, I'm thinking, oh my goodness, I'm becoming like Eric McPherson.
I don't see that.
Yeah. But just some of the things that he has had a conviction about versus what he has done. Just like camp a couple years ago, things he had said, I'm like, oh my goodness, you know, and it's especially at camp, you got to be different there. You got to be more Church of Christ there mm-hmm. than you have to be individually.
And the people that he had teaching, I'm like,
I don't want to go there. I'm amazing. But he and Lane both, and Lane is kind of conservative. I've scratched my head with that. But for, and again, I've thought the same thing, and I'm like, what are you doing? But for him, these are people that are his project that he's trying to lead to grow in their faith. I disagree with the way he's doing it. It's him and a lot of other camp directors have done some things, having people down there. I'm thinking, what are you doing? And part of it is you got less and less options of who to get down there. But with him and Lane, I disagree with it totally. And the board is aware of some of this stuff too. But for him, because he has such a love for them, he wants to bring them along, and he sees what camp can do to help people grow in their faith. So, and I'm not defending him. I'm just, because I'm trying to understand some of the things that he and Lane have done.
Right, and I, you know, like I said, I disagree with him on some things, but I think, you know, we're going to have months to sit down and talk through some things and you get a better feel for things. And, you know, there's the essentials of the faith, and I'm pretty sure that he and I are on those. But, you know, there's certain, sometimes he said he doesn't, he's not sure, and he's great. He'll just think out loud and say, well, sometimes I'm not sure about a literal hell. You know, yeah. Is that going to be forever? Or mm-hmm. will people go to heaven and everybody else just blip out? You know, those mm-hmm. kinds of things. And he's just sharing doubts that he has. And it's like, well, that's interesting. You know, and again, it's like, well, let's talk about that and how you express that and those kinds of things.
And a lot of that, he's come to that conclusion from reading Edward Fudge, who's a Church of Christ scholar, maybe. Who's come to those conclusions, right. And that's him influenced him with that.
Like, right, and so it's like I'm open to it, and so like, yeah, let's sit down here and talk about it. But again, there are kind of like what we're talking about with LGBTQ. Mm-hmm. It's like there's a lot of ways to think about it, but you still have to be sensitive on how you express that. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. You know, you just can't shoot from the hip all the time. And not to say that he's a loose cannon, but mm-hmm. You know. It's one thing to have non-standard views on things, but you know how freely you express those and to whom, that's the other thing. So, but anyway, I think have him at this table for a few months and be able to sort through that all.
Mm-hmm. So that leads me to this question. So, and I wonder how we would handle that too. If we have someone at the table that's been sitting a while, and he's not a good fit, but he thinks he's a good fit. You know, how will we handle that? Right. So, I'm not suggesting that's going to be Eric's case, but I agree with you. Having him at the table will be a healthy way to figure out if this is a good fit for him. But I'm not sure how we handle if we perceive someone not to be a good fit. You know. How do we help that person to understand that he's not a good fit? You know, so not that we have to cross that bridge now, thank God. But.
Yeah, and hopefully, and we all seem to be fairly frank, which is good. And I think when we did this with Ross, it was a little different than with Jeff. I think we said, okay, what's our thoughts on Ross? And, you know, people around the room, it's like, he's got young kids. This might not be the best time for Ross, you know, those kinds of things. And I think at the end of that, we said, yeah, let's talk to Ross. But I think we were ready to say, Ross, we love you, but now's not the good time. Maybe we bring you back to the table in a couple years. And so
I thought he had decided. He pulled the plug.
Yeah, pulled the plug.
And I thought what he had decided was that maybe there's some things that he needs to do, like maybe teach a class.
Well,
he had not
really right. So we went around the table, and we said, here's on the plus side, here's on the minus side. Mm-hmm. And we came out, there's some minuses. Mm-hmm. But we're still going to go forward with him. And then so we said, yeah, Ross, here's what it is. But I was going to say, if the negative side weighed heavier than the pros, I think we're ready to say, Ross, now's not a good time, and we'll pick this back up later or something like that. But I think hopefully we'll be willing to do that with whomever.
So let me throw out something just as an outsider. So there's one thing about Ross. Ross will listen. Ross didn't say very much in the meetings intentionally. I mean, we know he speaks a lot, but generally he tried not to say anything in here. Mm-hmm. Two other characters on this list, they will not be quite as quiet. Mm-hmm. And they will not be, because they're seasoned. So you have Jeff and you have Eric. They mm-hmm. both are very strong personalities. Mm-hmm. So in that situation, as they're going through the introductory, let's say, time, and you get to the end, will the eldership that is a little more not as confrontational be able to tell them if they feel that maybe not, or will their persuasion or their push from that side be too strong?
Great question.
And because what will happen is after that. So say one of them gets in and they're the strong voice, that will be the voice of the elders from that point forward. as long as they're there. Well, and especially, and it'll be interesting if the two of them are there, because they don't agree on most everything. They're both liberal, though, so they're both on a different front than most of the rest of the people at this table right now. So it's a very different characteristic. You have two liberals that are pretty much opposite sides of each other, because one is a politically conservative liberal, the other is a sort of moderate, the other direction. So it's.
But that's where the Shepherd's Covenant comes in. Right. Like, you and I, we've had some discussions and some disagreements, but that's in the meeting. We know each other's heart, and we leave here united with whatever the groups decide. And that's the Shepherd's Covenant helps with that, if we take that seriously.
And I think, to your point, that's a great point that you made there. And I think if we can have some practices where if a person is really kind of missing a point, or he's not aligning well, I think we need to be able to call him out there, know, and not in a way that we're trying to bring him down, but just, just let him see why we see it differently, see the point of view differently, and have those discussions. And then I think if that is something that we're practicing ongoing throughout the process, I think it would make our decision a little bit easier if we get to the end of the process, as if it's not a good fit. He's going to figure out it's not a good fit as well. We had a lot of kind of pushbacks from one another, right? And so I think being willing to do that throughout the process, not looking to do that, but if it's necessary to do that, when it's necessary to do those things, that we'd be willing to do those things.
And with Eric, when I was executive director, I've had some pretty harsh
frank conversations
with him, mm-hmm. and he's been very submissive, mm-hmm. knowing that I was in the boss, mm-hmm. And I was really impressed with that. Okay. Not a whole lot, but we have some, and okay. I don't like doing those things, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. And he would be very submissive to the what he needed to be submissive to.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, when we do that, people may not be a fit because they're sinful or they're unqualified. You know, we just spend time with them, and it's like, you know, your views are different than ours on the critical issues, or it's just you're not a good fit. You're a good guy, but at this point, it doesn't seem to gel with the direction we're going, those kinds of things. And hopefully, we can act on either of those, and we'll be able to do what needs to be done.
You guys put my mind at ease. I'm at the call of the night.
Oh. What time is it?
Midnight.
Oh, it is.
9:03. Okay, so number 7, we kind of already talked about. The rest of the stuff that we can do later. Next meeting is August.
4th. I'm going to be gone.
Oh, I will be too.
Who's chair?
I am.
Are you still? Okay, yeah. That's your month again, too.
Do we want to make it the 11th?
You're the chair.
Well, I don't want to. I mean, if.
Well, the other is you no longer have Tuesday obligations, because wasn't part of the.
No, I don't have Tuesday, but I'm going till the 6th.
Okay.
So I don't have. Yeah, I was working counseling on Tuesday nights, but I don't anymore.
Okay.
Yeah, I've still got my board meetings.
On Mondays?
Stuff like that, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm gone all that week, so if it's the 11th or,
Or the 12th.
Something else.
Yeah. Let's decide here now. Are you guys available on the 11th or 12th?
It's that far forward, I think I can make myself.
Okay. Do I keep it Monday? And that's the day after, that'll be the first time for
Andrew
to be there, so that's probably good then.
Yeah.
Tell him you have a long Monday.
Yeah.
Because that'll be his first day in the office too, so just plan to stick around here until midnight. Don't fall out the window.
Okay. Brett, can you close this out?
Yeah. Father, we just want to bow before you, and like Debbie reminded us, just understand that we are on holy ground. And Father, it's your creator, and we are your servants, and we just always want to be mindful of our place. And We come before you with so many plans and hopes and dreams, but we always want to understand your will and your plans and your hopes and your dreams, and help us to lock into that work and be about that. And Father, I am truly excited about Andrew starting and what you can do here. I pray that all of us can have a vision for what we can do, and how we can connect with people, and that how we can really build up this body to strengthen one another, and just to have joy in our mission to serve here and doing your will. Father, I want to end as we started, just remembering that as shepherds, we need to strengthen the weak. We need to be praying over the sick. We need to bind the injured, search for the lost, and bring back the strays. And Father, again, we're busy with many things, but help us to be mindful of that most of all. In Christ's name, amen.
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 So what are the next steps for the Kelpies, guys? What do you want me to do there?
The Kelpies?
Yeah.
I would say tell them, go on and plan the things that they wanted to plan as part of the...
So the way I understood it is kind of what Dave was saying is... It doesn't sound like you're ready to be ministers or start a ministry, but you need to follow what the Spirit is calling you to do, and, you know, we will help engage in that as much as we can. So if you want to start doing a couple things, that'd be great. So that's kind of what I heard.
Awareness events, yeah, is kind of what they see themselves coordinating.
Crown Candy, so, St. Louis trips.
Okay. Okay.
And Steve, if you didn't hear, the 11th is the next meeting.
Yeah, instead of the 4th, we're going to do it the 11th.
Yeah.
Okay.
Several of us are on, and also it'll be the first.